The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Brightside Chat.
Hey, welcome back to the Brightside. Got a lot to get to this week. We started off with a few questions and comments from listeners, which was a lot of fun, so keep those questions and comments coming, whether it be on Facebook or email or Twitter. And then we have a lot of fun and recommended reading this week. A lot of good books we talked about, from even a few from last week as well. Then we get into Big Bang Theory, not just the show and the quality of the show, which we do get into, but its mark on comic book culture. We really like that show and a lot of fun. So let's get into the store. Hey, John, thanks for letting me in at this late hour.
Hey, man, anything for you.
All right, let's start off with a quick question.
All right.
Thor's hammer.
Uh-huh.
If it's left in space, it's just sitting there floating.
Right.
And I float my way up to it. Can I take it with me?
Don't know.
See?
Would it just float, or would it drop like a rock to the nearest asteroid or planet?
Well, it would float. If he left it there, it would stay like a good dog. Yeah. But it's like you can't move it.
And we know that it wouldn't move forward because it has no propulsion and there's no wind in space.
Correct.
Hey, let me ask you this, because I meant to talk about this last week and I completely forgot about it. When we were talking about the Clone Wars.
Yep.
If there's no wind in space.
Yeah.
How come Count Dooku flies a ship that has a big parachute at the front of it?
The best answer is that's for solar radiation. It's collecting solar radiation. Joe and I have said that a lot of people. I've heard that one before too, because it's a parachute, but it's not meant for. It's not grabbing wind. It's probably grabbing energy, because if you look, I think it's actually going the wrong way. It's going into, well, no, it's not going the wrong way.
No,
it's at the front of it.
It's going right way, but it's at the front.
But yeah.
Which is at the front, which is weird.
Right. So it's pulling it along. But yeah, that isn't meant as a, for propulsion. It's meant for energy absorption. I would imagine. That's just a guess.
Just thinking. Yeah.
But I like that Thor's hammer one, though. Because it's like.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because it's not gravity that keeps it down. It's the magic of the hammer. So if it's sitting in space and you went to grab it, you'd actually be like, oh, wait a minute.
I'm sure you could probably grab it. You would just never be able to leave
that spot. That's what I mean. It would stay right there.
You could just hang there, hanging off the hammer for the rest of your life. I don't know what satisfaction you get out of that.
Well, actually.
At least you'd be worthy.
Yeah. You take selfies of you holding it, like you're holding it up.
Right.
Like you grab it, turn yourself what would be feel like upside down, but it's space. There's no right side up. So you'd take selfies of you holding the hammer. That'd be funny.
Yep.
So, all right.
Hey, there's a way around everything.
Yep. So you just have to go out in space and look for Thor's.
And look for you just float around out there until you find the hammer. And then you'll be good to go.
So I have another question. This is from Eddie S. on Facebook. He contacted me. Said, I have a question for the bright side to consider. Why didn't Agent Coulson come back for Infinity War or Endgame? Or do the Avengers know he was brought back to life? It would have been cool if he was at Stark's funeral.
The Avengers don't know he's alive.
Yeah. I know. I figured. I know that.
For everything that I've read about it, because that was, I've read other people asking that, is that the Avengers still think he's dead. So I don't know.
And if I watched the show back the last I heard about it was when Fury was on the show, and wasn't it him? Like he said, we're going to keep this a secret. He didn't want anybody knowing he was alive because something like keeping him safe, and it helps them work too.
Now the only thing is there has been Sif has appeared on that show. Who interacts with Thor, who interacts with the Avengers. So maybe at some point she would mention that this guy was still kicking around, but you never know.
But she also might not know his relevance to everybody. You know, be like...
She might not.
As far as she knows, he could be like an Agent Smith to her in her head. You know, just another guy in a suit. So, Yeah, I thought that was a good question. And it's like, I think a lot of people thought of that too. It's like, especially at the funeral.
Well, because he's the one you would think would show up.
Yeah.
To the funeral, for sure.
Yeah. Robert Pattinson playing Batman. What do you think?
I have no opinion on that, to be honest with you.
Wow, that's a way to make a podcast.
I am withholding judgment. I have never seen anything that he's ever appeared in. I've never watched Twilight. Seen him as an actor. So I will admit that when I first saw that report, Sparkly Batman was not, like, it didn't immediately resonate with me as a positive thing. But when I sat back and realized that I have no idea what this guy can act like or anything.
He is a good actor.
That I would say that I trust Matt Reeves as a director. I've liked the things that he's done. So they've probably interviewed or tested 100 people to play Batman. And if he's the best one they have, then he must have something. So I'm going to trust in the process.
Well,
and I'm going to be bright about
there
it.
There we go.
And I'm not going to be super negative.
I think the new process should be you just throw a dart at the wall, right? You pick your actor, and then you wait for the petitions to start, and then go with those, right?
Right.
Because then you'll make everybody happy. You know, you get, I mean, that's really the way it seems to be going nowadays. Everybody thinks you sign a petition and you get what you want. When I don't think it has ever worked.
Are we going to talk at all about how incredibly stupid that is? Or
does it really
need to be said? That's what I'm saying. I don't think it, well, it does to a million people who think Game of Thrones is going to be remade.
Right.
It needs to be said to somebody, but
so
I don't know. Like, when in the history of ever has that ever worked? Like, Game of Thrones, a series finale was the most watched show on HBO history, 19.3 million people or whatever. They've got their money.
Yeah.
Like, does anybody seriously think they're going to go back and spend two more years rewriting and reshooting and repaying all these people? I think it is so completely disrespectful to the creators to even put an idea like that out there. Whether you like it or not, and we're not going to debate the end of Game of Thrones on this on this podcast, but I would say, not to get too far off the track, but I put a tweet out there earlier in the week that got very little interaction. I don't think anybody really paid any attention to it, and it might be because I posted it in the middle of the night on a Sunday, but it was an article that I read that talked just about exactly this. And the headline is, you can't change your favorite pop culture, but you can change how you engage with it. And it goes on to talk about specifically Game of Thrones, Star Wars, and Batman.
Yeah.
Three of the most toxic fandoms in existence. And this is the best thing I have read in quite a long time. And it even opened my own eyes to how I interact with these things and made me realize how foolish I am sometimes, even when, you know.
Well, give me an example.
When I look at these things.
Sometimes I don't think it's foolish. I think it's part of the journey, part of the fun.
Well, the thing is, and I'm not going to read this whole article, you know, because it's a long article, and I'm not going to spend any time reading it. If you want to see it, Arkham Comics and Games account tweeted it out earlier in the week.
Okay.
I don't tweet a lot, so you shouldn't have a hard time finding it. But in essence, the biggest thing is that criticism in itself isn't wrong or negative. Like, you can criticize all you want, but thinking that the creators owe you a specific ending or outcome because you love a certain thing is narcissistic and naive.
Right.
You know? Like, the creators don't even owe you an ending to the story.
No.
Like, they don't owe you anything. A creator's job is to put their creation out into the world. And that's it.
Right.
They don't owe you an explanation. They don't owe you any kind of conversation. Nope. Their job is done once they put whatever they put into the world. If they happen to feel like they want to engage in conversation, that's just bonus, you know?
Right.
They don't owe you that. And no amount of love for anything entitles you to a certain ending or a certain course of action.
Right.
And so I just thought this article was incredibly enlightening. And especially in the face of, you know, this came right after, this was before the series finale of Game of Thrones, but it came after episode 5, which was very polarizing.
Yep.
And that's when the petitions started going up. And I read this article, and it was just like, you know, it kind of changes the way I look at things. Even though I wasn't nearly as upset about Game of Thrones as a lot of the world was.
Well,
you know, it talks about Last Jedi. It goes on and talks about other things, too. And I don't know. Like I said, it was a great read, and it seems like a much happier. That's why I can sit here and say that I'm not upset by Robert Pattinson becoming Batman. Because in reality, if it ends up being a bad choice, well, then I don't have an obligation to watch it.
Right.
You know, I could just walk away from it and be done with it. So,
well, I think a lot of that, that's the good and the bad of people criticizing a particular, you know, piece of work, whether it would be a Star Wars or Game of Thrones. But people feel like this is where I think people get into trouble is, well, not really trouble, but this is where they kind of deviate from what the plan is. They think it's theirs.
Right.
And it's like, no, it's for you to enjoy. If you don't enjoy it, so be it. But you know what I mean? And it's like, these are pieces of art.
Right.
And like you said, the creators have their own agendas and their own intentions with these pieces of art. And we've said it many times here. It's like everything has a meaning, stuff like, you know, and stuff like that, where people do certain things in whatever medium it is, it'll mean something to that artist. And then when you criticize it, it's like, fine, you didn't get that meaning. You don't understand it. You don't like it. It doesn't resonate with you. That's fine. But to want it recreated, knock yourself out. But they're not going to do it.
Right.
They created that.
Right.
You want to do it better? Knock yourself out and go do it better.
Right. Fan fiction exists.
Yeah.
And if you want to write a new ending to Game of Thrones that satisfies you, go put it down on paper and pretend that that's what happened.
Right.
And that's fine. You know, but I just don't know where this sense of, like, you don't see anybody signing petitions
for
Da Vinci to go back and reprint and repaint the Mona Lisa. You know, it's like, maybe not everybody loves that piece of art, but nobody has a petition for him to go redo
it.
So
I said that.
It's just, and part of what actually generates this is what we do right now.
Right.
Is speculating. Like, we sit around and people, you know, when you have 2 years to wait between Star Wars movies, what do? You get around and you talk about things so much that you write your own ending to it.
Right.
And then when it doesn't turn out to be what you decided it should be, now all of a sudden you're mad and you want them to go back and redo it.
Well, it's funny, and that's where I think social media, it obviously, I'm not, you know, saying anything revolutionary here. Social media has changed the landscape as such that when we were kids, we did the same thing. But it was it was like 10 of us, right? So now you multiply that by, you know, 100,000, and you've got a million people, and now you think you have a million people that are on your side, and that might be the case, but that's still such a small percentage of the entire fan base that it's like, but those people are now emboldened. They're like, look, I've got a million people that'll sign this petition. Yeah, but there's how many millions and millions of people that are against you?
Can you imagine the Twitter shit show in 1987 if Twitter existed when they announced Michael Keaton was going to be Batman? I know, sorry. You can bleep it out in post. Yeah, I do. But it's like, can you imagine what Twitter would have looked like in 1987 when they announced Michael Keaton as Batman? And look how that turned out.
Right.
You know?
Well, we already were like that. We all were like,
well,
Michael
the thing
Keaton,
is, we were,
Mr.
but
Mom?
Like you said, there was only 10 of us.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. And we were like, isn't he kind
of, Mr. Mom and Beetlejuice is going to be Batman?
Isn't he kind of short? It's like, I don't get it.
And bald?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's like, it played fine. And the same.
Now we want him back again.
Right.
We want him to be Batman again.
Yeah.
It's like.
Yeah, exactly. Batman Beyond.
So, yeah.
But no, and now people want, you know, Ben Affleck back.
Right.
And
when a year ago, nobody wanted him again.
Nobody wanted him again, and nobody wanted him in the first place.
Right, but now that he's the now that it's the choice between him and Robert Pattinson, right. All of a sudden everybody wants Ben Affleck back.
Right,
and it's like it's, that ship has sailed. Like Ben is done; he's not coming back.
But and that, that
this is where we're going forward. Right. So,
and that's what's fun about this, and that's where we came up with this. It's like, all right. It's, I mean, people haven't learned to like, oh, let's watch and wait and see and then make a decision. Right. It's like, no, it's, but you're right. There's time in between things. People need things to talk about. That's what we're talking about now. But yeah, that I actually had a conversation with Dr. Joe. We were talking about Attack of the Clones, talking about George Lucas, the whole art behind it. And what it means to be an artist, and it's like George Lucas changing things, and it's I've had this conversation many times with many people, and it's look he wanted to change the original, the first three, or well not right. the first three, but you know what I mean, four, five, and six, and it's you know it's what it means to be an artist. Like he had a vision in his head, and when he right. was finally able to do it, he did it. And a lot of people hate him for that. They think it's horrible.
And again,
I mean,
I don't like them, but I appreciate his right to make them exist the way he wants
right.
them to exist.
Because you and
I will still watch my bootleg
exactly.
originals.
But here's the thing. Had he created it the way he wanted in the first place, those would be the things that we fell in love with.
You're right.
You know
it
what I mean?
Have.
And then imagine if it was the other way around. And he all of a sudden made it look the old way.
Took them all
out. And
you,
we'd be like, what the hell? You took out some of the best parts. Like, where's right. Boba Fett? Where's, you know? So
where's Jabba walking around in Mos Eisley?
Right. It's like, that doesn't even make sense anymore, you know? We'd be all upset about it. But because we fell in love with the first one, and the best part to me is all these people that were born, like, in the 90s, and
they don't even know.
No, they know because of us. They know that's what's the original, and that's what they want. They're like, well, that they've been told that that's the best, so that's what they go with. When in actuality, what they probably saw first was the other one,
right?
But as an artist, it's like we've both created stuff, and when we're done, it's not what we had in our mind. It's so hard to duplicate what you had in your mind, and he's done that. And to anybody that would say, well, he just did it for the money. Well, if he did it for the money, he'd be selling both. But he's not. He's banned the other one.
Right. And no, this was his vision that that technology wouldn't allow him to create in 1977.
Right.
And I appreciate, like I said, I appreciate his right to do whatever he wants. You know, I've heard so many times that, you know, George Lucas doesn't know about Star Wars. And it's like...
Really? He created it.
Nobody knows Star Wars more than George Lucas,
right.
you know? If Star Wars is all about trade federations and talks,
right.
well, then that's what it's about.
Right.
Because that's what he says it's about. It's not up to you to tell him he's wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
You can't tell him he's wrong. Whatever he says is right. It's like... Right.
So, but, I mean, people say... It's like, you know, George Lucas ruined Star Wars. He doesn't know how to make a Star Wars movie. He's the only one that knows how to make it, as far as I'm concerned.
It's his creation.
Right.
So, right. I mean, yeah. Let me see. I'll save that one for after. What'd you have about, you said something about Tom King? I saw
some stuff
today on Twitter, but.
Yeah, there's been a lot of rumors on Twitter today that Tom King is ending his run on Batman early. He was supposed to go to, I think it was issue 102, somewhere, you know, around, you know, a little after issue 100. And it looks like now he's coming off at around issue 85. There hasn't been a specific announcement on the final issue that he is going to write, but the word on the street is that he is leaving the title at the end of this year and will be working on some other projects at DC that are so far undisclosed. So don't know what that means for his original plans for the story. And you know, just like everything else, there's all those people that hate the end of Game of Thrones or The Last Jedi. There's a million people that hate his run on Batman, so I'm sure there's a whole bunch of people that are dancing in the streets right now that Tom King is no longer going to be writing Batman. I'm not one of them. I've, for the most part, enjoyed his run. You know, when you get 70 issues deep, not everything is gold. So there's parts of it I could, you know, I could have done without. But by and large, I've really liked his run. And I'm a little disappointed that we're not going to see it to its conclusion. There's been absolutely no word from DC or from Tom King whether this was his decision or whether it was DC's decision. Speculation is that, you know, circulation on Batman has dropped and he's being removed due to poor sales. I think if that was the case, they wouldn't be giving him additional projects at DC to work on.
Right.
Although there's no telling that what he's getting is going to be as high profile as Batman. We don't know. But circulation numbers don't lie.
Could you go higher? I don't think you could get one higher.
No. I mean, Batman is the pinnacle at
So anything he does from here would be, unless he gets
anything
Superman,
he does
maybe.
Is lower, but I don't know that he's being punished is what I'm saying. Like, it might be his choice, although it feels like he had a specific number of issues and a specific story plotted out. So for him to be ending it early kind of smacks a little bit of not his decision, but
really,
you know, we don't know for sure. I mean, circulation numbers aren't rumors. I mean, those are fact. And, you know, the fact is that Batman numbers are down. So whether that's just more things in the marketplace that are taking up, you know, those sales, or, you know, maybe some people aren't happy with his run, you know, there's no telling.
Well, it's funny because
circulation's down about 20,000 copies a month, which is a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that's significant. That's 20% of normal numbers. So
it's funny because I'm enjoying the run. I enjoyed the Nightmare series.
Well, and that's what a lot of people are pointing to as the end, as the downfall.
Right, and I don't understand. It's like, so obviously talking with the guys at the Batpod and stuff, they were tired of it, and they were like, three issues left, and they're like, we're done with this, and I'm like, I don't understand that line of thinking. I'm not saying they're wrong, you know. I don't understand that line of thinking. Like, it's like what are you trying to, is there something you need to get done in this book before a certain time? Like, do you have an alarm clock that's going to, I don't understand. Why can't you just let the story play out? And if it takes so long to do it, you let it happen. You know what
I
mean?
Well, just playing devil, well, because just to play devil's advocate on that, because you're paying $4 for 20 pages of story. So if you're getting, if something's being stretched out for three issues that could be told in one, well, I spend an extra $8. And I guess the answer to what your point is, if we're going to lose 15 issues at the end of it that we would have gotten, I could have done without three of those Nightmare issues, and maybe we would have got one more arc closer to where we were needing to go.
But Mike,
I don't know.
Can I counter that for a
second?
Nobody
has a crystal ball. And, you know, we didn't know. Well, yeah, you can, but just one second. We didn't know when we were reading the Nightmare series that we were going to lose the last 15 issues.
Right.
So, I mean, nobody really knows for sure, but I do from a financial standpoint, and, you know, again, full disclosure, everybody knows I own a comic book store, so I don't,
you do?
I don't pay full retail for comics. But, I mean, if I'm paying $4 for a book, you know, it's the same thing as, you know, going to buy a movie ticket. You want to get a certain amount of satisfaction for what you're spending.
Right.
And if you don't like what you're reading, yes, right, you always have the option just to stop buying them. But I think that's what happens.
Right.
People stop buying them and the circulation dropped. So
my counter to that, though, is, so the Nightmare series took, what, 9 books? I think it was was it even 9 books?
I don't know. It was a lot.
Maybe it was
7,
and it was the 2 in the middle, the 2 crossovers. Right. But regardless of how long it took, like you said, it's like, well, it's $3.99 a book, or $4.90, whatever it is, right? You're going to buy a book. You're going to buy the next book anyways. Most of these people are subscription-based. You're reading Batman. You know what I mean? So it's like, if this takes 9, if it takes 15, if it takes 20, if it took 2, when it's over, you're still you're going on to the next book, the next story. So I don't understand. It's like, it's not a waste of money because you're buying the next book. And for people that cancel their subscription over it,
well, I guess my counter to your counter on that, though, is that
no,
well,
that,
no,
I understand.
But still, then, at what point, though, as a So, of course, it's in DC's best interest in that line of thinking to say, well, they're going to buy every issue anyway, so let's take a story that should be told in one issue and spread it out over three, because now I get $12 instead of $4. But at a certain point, right. What responsibility do you have to your readership to advance the story along at a pace that's satisfactory to everybody?
Right.
You shouldn't have to take three issues to tell a one-issue story just to get eight more dollars. And I think that's what some people were feeling, is that it was being stretched longer than it needed to, and it's, you know, maybe a money, seen as a money grab or what have you. I get what you're saying. Like, most people buy every issue no matter what.
That's what I mean.
But if the story becomes irrelevant or not enjoyable to you, that's when you lose subscribers.
Right.
So DC still has a... You can't be short-sighted and say, I'm going to get your $12 now by giving up your $48 later.
Right.
So
no, I get that. I think it's exactly that. I'm like, I don't understand it. I liked the Nightmare series. I thought each
issue
was...
Right, well, some people probably really did.
Right. But apparently it lost, you know, readers.
Well, and it... Right. But it's been over for a couple of issues, and we haven't seen the final circulation numbers, but I don't know if those people have come back or not. That will be the real shame, is if they don't come back after it ended.
Yeah.
Because then you've lost them. You know, if you just lost them for those five issues, it's not the end of the world. If you lose them forever,
right,
then, you know, that's when you start having issues.
So
I think, you know, I can see this from, not to spend so much time on the Tom King thing, but I can see it from both sides of the coin too, because like from DC's perspective, it's all about, like, I mean, they're a for-profit business, let's be honest. I mean, they're not here to, you know, for the art necessarily. They're here to sell copies. So if books aren't selling, they have a responsibility to do what it takes to get the sales. But they're also, on the other side of the coin, they're hampering his creativity. They're stifling the story just for the dollar. So, you know, there's a couple ways to look at it, and I think there should be a happy medium somewhere. Where, you know, because at a certain point, if every book has to be cookie cutter to get your numbers, well, then anybody can write them. Like, you could just give me the outline, and I can write all your Batman stories for you.
Right.
If you're going to tell me exactly what every issue has, on page 5 he has to have this fight. By page 9 he has to be, you know, kissing Selina. By page 20 he has to be done with the villain. I can write that story too. You know.
Hmm.
So at a certain point, you know, you have to have room for creativity, and I think
right. That's
where that's just what I'm kind of worried about. It's like, we don't want every book to be cookie cutter. We all know, like the sitcom method, where every sitcom has the same,
right?
You know, the same basic act.
We'll get into that.
Like that. So,
another Tom King. Do you think this has anything to do with it? And I actually had a conversation on Twitter with Glenn Reed's Comics. I don't know if you saw this one. So he actually, he wrote an article on Heroes in Crisis 8, and he really liked it, really liked 8, he really likes the series, and I had commented on it, and he asked me to read his review, and so I read it, it was really good. I'll retweet it tomorrow, his review. I'll retweet it out on Thursday, actually, and he said stuff like one quote I said I really liked was, fans get so passionate about our favorite characters that we confuse what is written versus how it is written. And then I said, I would add to the point, it's, you know, the point of art is to evoke emotion, and it doesn't mean it's always a good emotion. And that's pretty much what he's done with Heroes in Crisis. But he's getting a lot of flack for that, too.
Well, right, that's another book that's not been very well received the longer it goes on. You know, the closer it got to the end, the more discontent there's been out there among the fans.
Right.
You know, sales are dropping on that as well.
Yeah.
So, and I don't know if that has played at all into,
see,
you know, the decision on
that. I like Tom
either.
King, though, because I think he pushes the envelope. I think he's pissing people off, and I kind of like it.
I like him, too. Like I said, I'm not anti-Tom King at all, and I've had some issues with Heroes in Crisis, but overall I've enjoyed the story too.
Yeah.
But there's a few issues there toward like 6 and 7 that were really kind of out there to me and didn't make a lot of sense. So, you know, I can see where some of the criticisms are coming from, but I think, you know, we've said it a million times on, even on this podcast, you know, the point of any art is to evoke reaction. So love it or hate it, you're still reacting.
Well, what's funny is it's like you put something out there, like you take 6 and 7 that you're like, wow, that's really out there. But you look at it, I look at it and say, well, yeah, he went, you know, he went to the edge. He did something that's out there and we're talking about it. Had he done your cookie cutter story, we'd be like, what's the big deal about Heroes in Crisis?
Right.
You know, it's like the fact that we're talking about it and you bring that up, it's like bringing up Thor's hammer in a comic book store. You get both extremes. You get people, I loved it or I hated it, which to me, that's one of the best things an artist can do. And he's doing that.
Right, that's the point. And that goes back to even the article that I was talking about earlier, is you don't have to love everything. Like, I didn't love issues 6 and 7 of Heroes in Crisis. But I liked the beginning, and I liked issue 8. And so, it's not broken. Like, it's part of the ride. One story. Right. At the end, it all becomes one big story.
Right.
Like, these all get compiled into a... Like, when you read these in a graphic novel, you don't know what was issue 6 and what was issue 7. You're just reading the story. So...
Right.
It's just a lull in the story, or a part of the story that I didn't like so much.
It's the dip in the roller coaster ride.
Right. So, but like I said, I'm okay with that, because I don't have to love every single thing about it.
Right.
If I like the story in general, I like it. Even if I don't like it, it doesn't mean he didn't have the right to put it out there and, you know, tell the story he wanted to tell.
Right.
So,
yeah. No, I mean... It's anything he's coming out with. I'm kind of gravitating towards it now, because I know he's going to be pushing buttons,
right?
For lack of a better term. So, all right. You got anything else?
No, I don't think so.
All right, I got one last one. This I believe he wasn't even he. It was a conversation he was having. And, or he actually just tweeted this out and I loved it. I know he follows us. He listens. So this is going to be our listener spotlight for the week. This is Mark C at Zig2K. Get a hold of me. You're going to get your t-shirt for this one. This is his tweet he put out. The more I think about it, the more I love the final scenes of Snow heading north, Arya on the ship and Sansa in Winterfell. Leaving us to wonder, will they ever see each other again?
Spoilers.
I know. the next tweet he coupled with that. Maybe because I grew up in a pre-instant contact world. After high school /college, you really didn't know who or how you're going to keep in touch. Friends faded in and out. Some who were close during your formative years disappeared from your life. Something that is nearly impossible today. And I thought that was awesome. Because that's it. It's like it summarized like what everybody's issue is. It's like, you know, and I think I was listening to some people talk about this happens to be about Game of Thrones, but people were saying like, will this latest Game of Thrones, will it play better if you binged it? Like, we're waiting week after week, and where you have to do that, sometimes the anticipation, like you had said earlier, we've got 2 years to the next Star Wars, so it creates conversation, creates buzz, and then you create expectations, which then in turn creates disappointment, right? But if you sit down and binge, if you don't know anything about Game of Thrones and you binge it, maybe it doesn't come off as bad.
I don't know if binging it would help, because and I'm just thinking back to really, the biggest criticism of the entire season is that people felt like it was too rushed, and it was rushed to the finish. So I don't think binging it helps that criticism at all. I think it even escalates it even further, because you know, you're just going to go straight to the end.
Right.
But I think part of the issue with Game of Thrones, and you know, again, didn't think we were going to talk about Game of Thrones, but
yeah, this pertains to a lot of things. That's why I liked it.
But the thing with Game of Thrones is that everybody decided that Jon Snow was going to sit on the Iron Throne.
That's what I mean. Expectations.
And it was a foregone conclusion to everybody that watched that Jon Snow was going to be on the Iron Throne. So when he doesn't sit on the Iron Throne, everybody loses their minds, and it's a bad story because he didn't get the Iron Throne, which he said all along he never wanted. Like, he wouldn't have had a happy ending if he was sitting on the throne. That's not what he wanted. So I think that was part of it.
Well, that's exactly it. Like we said before, like it created expectations. Whereas if we sat down, like take Daredevil, for instance, where we binged it and people, you get to watch it at your pace. So, and there's no discussion between episodes because even you and I, you watch it at different paces, but we don't discuss between episodes. Like, what do you think's going to happen by the end? So there's no, there's no way, there's no built anticipation and expectations for you to ruin it for yourself because you're binging it. So if you haven't binged Game of Thrones, you don't know what it's like. And take my wife and I, for instance. We basically binged seasons 1 through 7 because we didn't watch it all. This is the first time we've watched Game of Thrones live. Like when it came out, we were there at 9 o'clock and bang, it was, that was it. But that was all the other times we just had a, we just flew right through it. We watched it at our pace.
Right. But I think you're right. I guess you're right in a certain degree is that there's a lot less discussion that happens between viewings,
right?
You know, and yes, that you're right, that might place and play some part in,
but I think it also creates the popularity too, because it gives you that old school feel, that water cooler talk where the water cooler talk you get with a Netflix or like a Daredevil. Hey, have you seen Daredevil? Yeah, don't tell me, I'm only on episode 3.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's the end of the conversation. But it became Game of Thrones. It took 8-10 years to build it, but it became like, have you seen it? Yes. It great, we'll have a conversation. Have you seen it? Why haven't you?
It's like, right, well, again, it was appointment viewing. Like,
exactly,
it might be one of the last things, and you know, this is a bold statement because who knows what the future brings, but this might be one of the last things that ever becomes like appointment viewing with the way streaming and the way
Disney
the landscape
Plus does it
goes. I don't know if
do you think you,
it depends, because I don't know if they're going to drop everything or not.
Yeah, but DC Universe isn't dropping everything at once. They're doing it week to week. So off of that model, you don't think Mandalorian's going to be I would be shocked if they dropped it all at once. I think they're going to do Mandalorian just like they're doing Game of Thrones, because you want that conversation. You need that conversation.
They might. I don't know. But like you know I said, the way things are going in the future, like the way things are now with our streaming landscape, is that less and less things are going to be broken down by week. And most things that you watch are going to end up being streamed or binged.
Yeah, but I beg to differ. Because look at DC Universe. They haven't dropped anything yet. All their original
DC Universe
content
doesn't have that kind of buzz. Like, nobody is, nothing on DC Universe is appointment viewing. Nobody really cares about it.
Titans was. I thought Titans was.
Yes and no. It was to us.
Right.
But everybody that you worked with wasn't talking about Titans.
No.
Or, you know.
Nope. You're right. But I think Disney Plus is going to be much bigger. I think Disney Plus is going to be as popular. The app will go out to as many people as like Game of Thrones, because you have the entire Star Wars universe wanting to get on there for Mandalorian alone. You know what I mean? So it's like,
I don't know. We'll see. I mean,
that's,
I'm not saying that it's never going to, that's why I said I can't see the future. I'm not saying that it's impossible to ever happen again, but most things are not going to create that that water cooler talk. Like we get now, you know, or like we had with Game of Thrones, you know.
I know. I think if Disney Plus does it right, I think we could do it with, well, at least Mandalorian to start, and then we'll see from there. But I think that would be the next, any of those Star Wars things. Speaking of which, did you see, speaking of Disney Plus, that Falcon and Winter Soldier is only slated for 6 episodes.
I did see that.
That's kind of disappointing. I mean, they're kind of going with the less is more tactic that everybody wanted out of the Netflix series. But I still would have liked to have seen, like, eight, you know?
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, they may expand with other series or other things.
Oh, yeah.
There's no saying that everything's only going to be six.
No, but, no, I'm just saying that one in particular. I just,
but yeah, who knows? It's, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. Did they say that it was only going to be one season, or?
All I know is they set the director and I don't remember who it was. They set the director.
Like maybe it's like maybe they're just
episodes.
Testing the waters. You know, like I'm rewatching Battlestar Galactica right now.
Right.
And I think season one was like 10 episodes.
Right.
But then season two was 20 episodes. Going back to The Walking Dead, season one was 6 episodes.
Right.
And then, so I mean, it may expand going forward. But again, these are, and I'm not saying like none of these guys are quote unquote like Brad Pitt movie stars or whatever. But I mean, these are movie stars. Like, I don't know if they're going to get them to commit to 10, 12 episodes.
Well, we've,
for a show
you
for
and
multiple
I have,
seasons.
You and I have said it in the past. I think anybody signing on a Marvel movie now is also going to have like in their contract that they have to appear in X amount of Disney Plus episodes, wherever and wherever they may be. It'll probably literally say that. They're not gonna, you know, that way they're not pigeonholed into an episode. It's any episodes we ask, and you get 10 of them out of you, or whatever the number is.
Right.
But
right. Well, I think most of their contracts say that now, as far as set number of appearances.
Right.
Now the appearances could just include Disney Plus.
Well, they'll add that in. Yeah.
Yeah.
That and that, like we said that when Chris Hemsworth signed to do more, you know. More films and you
know, because how great would that be if he popped into the Loki series in a cameo or something like that?
Of course,
you know, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so and what does that do for your Disney Plus subscribership? Like, it only makes sense for Disney to do that.
Ridiculous!
You know?
It's gonna
it's like,
be ridiculous.
My god, I'm gonna get Chris Hemsworth to show up on Disney Plus, so I gotta subscribe to that.
That's why I think that whole the whole universe is between those two is gonna be.
Little
so
do they know
fun.
It's gonna be fat Chris Hemsworth.
No, yeah. So, all right. Is that that everything?
I think so.
All right, let's go spend some money. What am I going to spend it on this week?
All right, so starting our speculator corner this week, we have Batgirl issue number 35. This is the Joshua Middleton variant. There is some demand for this book. It's not driving prices up over cover price, but sales have been pretty steady. On eBay, and they were steady in the store today. This is a really great looking variant cover, so a lot of people are picking it up. I wouldn't grab it for the money necessarily, but it is a worthwhile book to hold on to.
Yeah.
War of the Realms New Agents of Atlas issue number 2. This is also still in demand, which is a little bit of a surprise because everybody knew there was a lot of hype surrounding issue 1 and all the first appearances. And usually, that being speculator-driven, issue 2s usually fall off a cliff because nobody really cares about issue 2s after that. But for some reason, this one still has a lot of demand. The regular cover was selling for $7 to $10 on eBay, and the 1 in 25 variant was selling for around $60. This is one of the books I read today, and we're going to talk about it during the recommended reading. So
me too.
And Faithless, issue number 2, they have the, just like issue 1, they have a poly-bagged erotic cover. This is also selling for just a little bit over cover price. Not anything really to run out and grab unless that's your thing. But it did see a lot of sales today as well. So that is what I have for speculator books this week. Again, same as last week, there wasn't a ton of things that they hit the stands this week as far as new issues or variant covers.
Right.
So
we're
going to hop down. Yeah, back issue bonus.
Yep.
So Captain Britain number 1. This is a Marvel UK comic, actually. So a little bit harder to come by. There's a lot of Endgame hype surrounding this and more so much Far From Home than Endgame necessarily. Because it's a multiverse character. I believe he became Spider-Punk. He has something to do with one of the Spider characters. So a lot of people are picking this book up. Non-graded copies, that come with the, it, this was packaged with a promotional mask. They're selling for about $400, and copies without the mask are selling for about $100. And those are ungraded. Graded copies are through the roof. The prices are really, really high. So, again, this was already a key book going, you know, before this came out, but it's just jumping through the roof now. So if you have it, good on you. And
no, go ahead. I have a quick story.
If you don't, and I say it every time one of these books pops up, if you want it, get it now.
Yeah,
because it's only going to go higher.
So,
yeah.
So this doesn't have anything to do with back issue bonus. It has more to do with just like Captain Britain. It reminded me of something happened this week. So I put my stuff out onto Facebook, and so a friend of mine saw what we were doing, and he saw my backpack. He saw a bunch of the stuff, the gauntlet, all this stuff. He has family, and I think it's like Colombia. And he's heading down there for 3 weeks, and he's like, where can I get a backpack like you have or something? He has a kid down there for his birthday, wants to give it to him for his birthday. So I tell him where I got it. He finds it at a different place for a little bit cheaper, and he goes to order it. It won't be in on time. So he goes to ship it down there because it wouldn't be here, so he's going to have it shipped there. And he talks to the kid's mother, and he said, and she's like, that's not a good idea. And it was kind of a sad story because the kid really wanted a cap. He loves these characters and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they're like, you can't have Captain America because he'll get in trouble. He'll get picked on. And I was like, that's really kind of sad that it was like Captain America. And he goes, you need something like Iron Man or something that's not America. And it's like, he'll get bullied at school is what she had said. And I was like, man, I was like, that still goes on. I'm like, it's like, and that's not in, I'm not, that happens here too, but I just thought when you said Captain Britain, I was like, oh, could he get a Captain Britain? I said that to him, maybe a Captain Britain backpack.
But, that might work.
But, but yeah, I just thought that was kind of sad because the kid would have liked it, but then it's the same old thing. Like when we were kids, we got picked on for certain reasons and it's still happening and that reminded me of it.
That's crazy because you think these characters are universal. You know,
you would think, and I, and that's the sad thing. But even when we were kids and we were getting picked on, we were being picked on by people that were fans of it as well.
Right.
You know, so it's like, I'm sure the kids that are going, oh, you're Captain America. Well, whatever they're going to say, I don't know, but they're going to be fans of those movies too. And but it was just sad to hear it. And and we both were like, well, that's kids. It's like, you know,
right.
So, but anyway, so that just reminded me of that. Sorry to.
Is there a Captain Columbia? Or I mean, I don't know.
I don't know.
What's the hero that he's supposed to?
I'm not even sure it was Columbia. I know
what's
it was
the hero
somewhere
he's supposed
there.
To like.
I know exactly.
I know.
Iron Man. Somebody or Thor. Somebody's not designated to America, I guess.
Right.
So, but, all right, go ahead.
All right. So the next book is The Incredible Hulk number 449. This is the first appearance of the Thunderbolts. The rumor mill has it that the Thunderbolts may spin out of the Winter Soldier and Falcon show on Disney Plus.
Nice.
So that is seeing some movement, selling pretty steadily at $50 to $60 right now. So this was you know, a dollar bin book for a while. So you know, you may get lucky and be able to find this on the cheap. If you can, I would definitely pick it up because it's starting to see a lot of movement in that price range. Godzilla in Hell issue number 1. The only thing that comes to mind on this is the movie.
The movie, yeah.
I don't know what else would be driving the prices on this book. It's not even that old, but it's selling for about $25 right now. So if you can find one of those, it might be worth picking up. And then Uncanny X-Men number 134. This is the first full appearance of Dark Phoenix. Could probably figure out why that's seeing some movement right now. Again, this is an always in demand book. Like, it's a key. Everybody always wants to own it anyways. But with the movie coming up, you know, there's a lot of renewed interest in this character. Low grade copies are sitting for around $40. A high graded 9.8 copy sold for $800 the other day on eBay. So it's, you know, it goes anywhere from $40 to $800 depending on condition and whether it's graded or not. but this is always going to be a book that you're going to want to own. Even if the movie isn't successful, Dark Phoenix is always going to be a popular character for the Uncanny X-Men. So if you're an X-Men fan, you probably already own this. But if you're not, go out and grab one while you still can. And that is it for back issue bonus.
All right. FOCs.
So FOC from DC Comics. We have variant covers for Batman issue 73 by Ben Oliver, Nightwing number 61 by Warren Lau, and Teen Titans 31 from Alex Garner. And before I go any further, these were all posted on my Facebook page earlier today, as well as shared to the Brightside Chat Facebook page, if you want to see what these covers look like.
And they showed up on our Twitter, too.
Yes, and they are on our Twitter feed. The Batman 73 is really good looking, and so is the Nightwing, actually. They're both really good looking books. No new series from DC on FOC this week, so moving down to IDW, we have Narcos issue number 1. This is based off of the Netflix TV series of the same name, and I don't know how to pronounce this, Usagi Yojimbo issue number 1. So this is a character that's been around for quite a while. There's been lots of comics in the past with this character, but there's a new series launching. So if you're a fan of Usagi, go in and get that ordered. And that's it for IDW. Looking at Marvel, we have variant covers on Captain America number 11. This is the Battle Lines variants from Yoon Lee. We've got a Mark Brooks Spider-Man variant cover on Deadpool number 14. And my favorite of this of the bunch is the Tony Stark Iron Man Clayton Crane 25th variant. This is a really good looking cover. I like it a lot. So I would definitely go out and grab that. No new series from Marvel next week.
Yeah, that Iron Man one's nice.
Yeah. Dynamite Comics, we have Red Sonja / Vampirella / Betty and Veronica. Yep. Issue number 2. I actually read issue number 1. I liked it more than I thought I was going to. I thought it was going to be a little bit out there, and it definitely is. But, you know, fans of the show know that I really like Red Sonja, so I read anything yep. with her. And this was actually pretty decent. I liked it. The C cover on this one, the Laura Braga cover, is my favorite. That's the one I would take a look at. And then from Dynamite, we also have the Warlord of Mars Attacks. So this is a mashup from John Carter, the Warlord of Mars, and Mars Attacks. So, looks pretty fun. There's only really one cover for this, and then there's some incentive covers. The only one you're going to be able to get at my store is the main cover, because I'm not going to order 10 or 25 copies of this to get any incentives. So I wouldn't expect to get those too many places. And then from Valiant Comics, we have Psylords issue number 1. That's a brand new series, multiple covers for that. And that's it for FOC.
All right. Let's get right into it. Get into recommended reading.
All right, so recommended reading. The first book I have is from IDW Publishing. This is Road of Bones, issue number 1 of 4. You have that, all right. Did you read it?
Yes.
Yeah? Had you picked that before I sent you the... You know why? Because it was the only number 1 that came out this week that was from an independent...
Did you see that one?
I never even saw that one.
That's that.
Kess Comics?
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Yeah.
Nobody else can see what we're doing, and we're just being selfish and talking amongst ourselves. But yeah, anyways, Road of Bones. This is set in the 50s in Siberia in the Gulag of Kalima is hell on earth. So, you know, basically this, you know, bunch of hardened criminals that are been put away and... you know, food rations are tough. A lot of people, you know, there's not enough to go around. A lot of people are working really hard and not getting enough to eat. And character called Roman Morozov. So he's like stashing food away. He's found stashing food and gets in trouble because, you know, the prison guards think he's wasting food. And what he's really doing is he's leaving food for this...
it's like a demon or something, right? Or it's somebody a demon,
but it's kind of like a... It's like a folktale, though.
Right.
Like, he doesn't know that this demon exists. It's just a folktale that they've heard.
Right.
And he's supposed to be, like, a protector of the downtrodden. So he's basically leaving the food there just in case.
It's supposed to protect the dwelling, whatever it is. So
right.
His grandmother told him the story. Then one of the guards said the same thing. Like, my grandmother told me. And you leave the food outside as, like, an offering.
Right. So in a nutshell, he gets in a lot of trouble for hiding food. They add 10 years onto his sentence for hiding food, which seems a little extreme to me. But
well, yeah, that's the warden. But even that, he said, like, we're giving it all away. But it's
yeah. Well,
it's a good story.
Yeah,
it's
seemed interesting.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it's a very good story.
Yeah, the art was good. The story was good. I guess we'll leave it at that. We won't give any more details out because there's some other things that happen, you know, with the rest of the story. I'll leave it to say that I enjoyed it. I don't know that I'm super on board to want to read the whole series.
I got to see number two. I thought the pacing went like, so if you had a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being like very exciting, 1 being blah, I thought it was like a 2, 2, 3, 2, 3, 2, 3. Then all of a sudden at the end, I was so, it really grabs you at the end.
It did have that ending that we always talk about that kind of makes you want to see issue 2. But here's, I'm gonna equate this to Game of Thrones a little bit. I think like the third episode or so where everybody was complaining that it was too dark and they couldn't really see what was going on. This comic suffered from that a little bit.
I love those.
Like, I think in a lot of cases, though, the art... But I think it was a really dark in some cases, and you couldn't really tell what was going on.
Right.
And I get, same thing as Game of Thrones. They're trying to put you in the minds of these people that are living in the dark. And,
right.
You know, you're seeing what they see. But it did make it a little hard to follow because some of these panels didn't really have words. And you really couldn't see the pictures all that well. So
right.
I'm like, I don't know everything that's going on here.
But you get it by context as it goes on.
Right, that's the thing.
You
have to go.
You gotta keep going.
You have to go three panels ahead to find out kind of what was going on in the dark panel before it.
Right. But that was fun. I really liked it, and I will talk to you about it. I don't want to spoil it for people, but I had an idea about like 80% of the way through. I had like 20% left, and I'm like, I figured out the ending, and it didn't go that way. It's still May. But I don't know, but that's when it really ramped up, and I recommend it. I highly recommend it.
I think I recommend it. I'm definitely going to read issue 2, but issue 2 is going to be the one that's going to tell me whether I want to read 3 and 4 or not.
Yeah.
This one got me to issue 2, but I'm not 100% sure I'm on board until I see what happens in the next issue.
Yeah.
But like I said, this is sold out. Like this had a lot of buzz around it. This was sold out at Diamond before release today, and this is selling for about $12. So, people were out looking for it.
Yeah.
Again, I think it suffered from low orders. Like, I only ordered a subscription copy, and that was it. And I had to turn down 2 orders in the last couple days because people were trying to order it, and Diamond was already sold out.
Yeah.
So, whether there was word of mouth ahead of time or not, there was some demand for this, so... If you can find it, I'd go ahead and grab it.
Yeah. So, have you heard? This is probably my favorite book I've reviewed.
Hmm.
Have you heard of this, Drawing Blood?
No, I have not.
That surprises me. I understand why I haven't heard of it, but after reading it and doing the research on it, where it came from, so. KES, I imagine, is Kevin Eastman Stories. This is a self-published comic by Kevin Eastman.
Oh, Kevin Eastman, yeah.
Yep. So it's Kevin Eastman, David Avalone, and Ben Bishop. Script by Avalone, but artwork by Ben Bishop. But then there's also, like, in this story, there's reality, there's flashbacks, and then there's, like, hallucinations, I think they call them. I called it, like, before I read what they called it, I called it, like, a fantasy world. And it's a story written by Kevin about himself. Okay. But it's based partially on his life, and then it goes into like the whole fantasy thing. It has a little play on the Turtles. So Kevin actually drew the flashbacks. And when you see the flashbacks, I'll show them to you here. Tell me that doesn't look like the Turtles from the 80s.
Yeah.
And
sure.
It's the same. Remember the original Turtle comics? It's like that's the way it was
black
drawn.
And white, yeah.
And this is a plastic cover. The book, it's a plastic cover. It's weird, but it's really cool. So they did a Kickstarter back in 2015, I think, to get this going. Right. And one of the reasons it's such a good story, for anybody that's an artist or loves art or loves artists, this is a great story because there's one part of this book that really delves into what it's like to be an artist, and to create something, and you have the highs and lows of the art world. And it also has, like I said, fantasy stuff, the hallucinations, and like the art comes to life in a hallucination in one part of the story. And then it goes into the reality of what's going on in the story. Now, obviously, when you read this, you'll realize it's not a direct story to Kevin Eastman. Otherwise, there's a lot of stuff we didn't know about him, if that's true.
Right.
But they wrote this to be a movie and then realized it should be a show. And now they're putting it out in comic book form. And I think it's going to end up being a movie. If that was their original plan, I think they got the money. They did a Kickstarter thing. They wanted to get to 75,000. They got to that. Then they reached 100,000. So they're like, we're doing this project. And that was in 2015. It just came out now. The other story is radically rearrange Ronin Ragdolls, which is going to be a one-off that matches up with this, and it's kind of that's where the quote-unquote hallucinations come from. You'll see it in the story, and that's like almost like a take on the Turtles. So definitely, I said if you've ever listened to me and said, oh, I like what DJ just said, just get this book. It's my favorite book I've read out of any of the recommended reading. There was just one part in there that I was just like, oh, I'm personally going through right now. And it was as an artist trying to do this one thing. I'll tell you about later, but okay. It's just so good. It's so good.
Okay. I don't want to sidetrack us, but two things you just said made me think of two other completely different things that I wanted to talk about.
There's no such thing as a sidetrack. We're talking in a comic book store.
You mentioned that, this was written to be a movie and, you know, turned into a comic book or whatever. But so speaking of comic books and movies or what have you, about a month ago, one of my recommended reading books was The Goon, issue number one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I talked about how there was a YouTube video of animated short that they put out there.
And I watched it.
And how awesome that was and how I wish that somebody would pick it up. Well, this week it got picked up. And they're
somebody's
making that
listening
movie.
To our podcast.
I know, right? So that animated movie is actually finally going forward. I haven't seen an announcement whether they have Paul Giamatti back on board or not, but I thought that was awesome because that clip made
didn't Goon 2 come out today?
Goon 2 came out today.
I haven't had a chance to read it yet.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but that's what made me interested in The Goon was that clip on YouTube, and I was so sad that never got picked up and turned into a movie that I wanted to mention that when we were talking about the news, and I completely forgot.
I
saw that yesterday that
I played that
the
clip
day before.
I played that clip for my wife, and she liked it.
Yeah,
she's like,
so it's going to be great.
Really good. This will be fun. She's like, when's it coming out? I'm like, it's not.
Yeah, but it's not. It
now
never
I,
is.
Now I could.
But
well, maybe
now it will.
I'm sure she'll hear it when she listens to the podcast.
That's right. She'll know. You won't have to tell her. And then the other thing you mentioned, that the book you just reviewed was the best thing you've ever reviewed, which made me think back to the best thing I've ever reviewed, which is not something I ever even reviewed. But after but I put it out on Twitter, is after last week's podcast, I read Daredevil issue number 5.
Yes.
And I texted you immediately in the middle of the night at like 3 o'clock in the morning and said, you need to read Daredevil this. Number 5.
Yep. And I
did. Daredevil number 5, and I'm not saying it's the best comic book ever made, but it is the best comic book I have read in a long, long time.
It is so good.
I mean, the arc, the whole first arc of this new Daredevil series, it's done by Chip Zdarsky and Marco Cicchetto is the artist. And it's been really good. Like, I really like the way they're going with Daredevil in this run.
Yeah.
But when I got to issue 5, and I got to the end of issue 5, and if you saw the tweet that I put out there talking about this, you saw the page that I posted next to it. And if you've read it, you already know. Like, I literally had, like,
chills,
goosebumps and chills when I got to the next page. And it was like, it is just such a good read, and I can't give enough credit to the writer and the artist. I think the art is perfect for this series.
Yeah,
And the writing is the best Daredevil I've read in a long time. And if you are not reading Daredevil, yes. If you are not reading Daredevil right now, you are really missing out. It is one of the great books on the shelf right now. I don't know where it's going to go from here.
Daredevil number 5.
I can't say it's always going to be great, but Daredevil number 5 is a must-read book.
Daredevil number 5, probably, and I read it, I got your text, I read it, and I was just like, it has, this is my bold prediction, my bold statement about this book. It has the greatest introduction in comic books.
Yes, it was awesome.
Unexpected.
It was
unexpected,
because I'm thinking to myself, "Who is it?" As like, and then of course it was so obvious when he turned the page.
But
like,
you've
who
never
else would it be?
But
you know,
but only and we're not giving anything away here.
No,
but only Daredevil could introduce somebody in this fashion.
Yes,
and it was it is incredible.
Right, but then like I said, when I turned the page,
chills now. Yeah. Just thinking about it.
I was
it.
Like,
so funny.
Oh, of course it's him. Who else could it be? But even that, like, that was great. But even going back earlier in the issue, like
the whole,
you know,
series,
he's running around
awesome.
In a Punisher t-shirt.
And he doesn't know it?
You know, he doesn't even know it.
Right, so, because that's the one thing, like, being blind, it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's like,
you have
I
all
know
these
I'm wearing
senses.
A shirt, but, so.
That was funny. Sorry to give that
great.
Away. That doesn't really give anything
no.
away, but.
But just great, really great issue. So I wanted to, if I could recommend anything, I would go back and say read Daredevil.
You know what I would, the one thing I would say about the entire series, it's the Netflix series that we wanted out of all those characters.
I think so. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like I said, even the one we're talking about here, a lot of people were claiming, there was talk of that. Like, why, you know. Let's get this thing going. Let's get characters in here. And it feels like this is written from the Netflix perspective.
Well, back about 5 months ago, I reviewed issue 1 on the recommended reading. And I talked about that specifically, how it felt like it was like the Netflix show on the page. And it was really...
Right.
It really had that feel. And it still does. But then, you know, like I said, I put that tweet out and I tagged the writer and the artist and got some likes and some retweets out of that. But this issue and the ending of this issue was Chip Zdarsky's pitch to Marvel to get this title. And that's what got him the book. So it took 5 issues for it to pay off. And it's not over. Like, this is not the end of the story. It's really just the beginning of it. But
so good.
This was his pitch to Marvel of what he wanted to do with the character. And
right.
Like I said, I really, really like it a lot. So,
and that's funny by contrast to what we were saying before this came out.
Yes,
remember
because
when
we were all
Daredevil
we were all
was
griping.
Dead.
Yes, I was like,
and then they
really
had the Man Without Fear,
it.
And we're like, what are we doing with another Daredevil? And here we are. We're just like, it's one of the best series right now.
It is, all right. So,
and that
here's
book
the only
is
thing,
awesome.
Here's the only thing I'll say to that though, is yes, everything we just said about this issue still holds true. but it would also held true if it was issue 795 of Daredevil instead of issue 5 of Daredevil.
Yeah.
Like, they still didn't have to reboot.
No.
They didn't have to end the series and start over again.
Right. So that's just number games.
And that's my biggest criticism of what Marvel does. This book would have still just been just as impactful if it was issue XYZ.
Right.
So, but yes, we were very critical of Marvel, or at least I was.
Yeah.
Very critical of Marvel and Daredevil back about 6 months ago when all this was going on.
Yeah, November, December, definitely.
Yeah. So
let's get now
to get back into
the
realms. This week's recommended reading. I think we both read this, and I know you do your War of the Realms update anyway, so we can both kind of talk about this. But this is War of the Realms, New Agents of Atlas, issue number 2. I don't really want to. I'm not going to really spoil anything on this because if you're going to read issue number 2, you've probably already read issue number 1, so you know what the setup is. The only thing I wanted to say about this book is that it had some really great scenes in it. Like, there's a scene where the Queen of Cinders has all these minions running around that are all on fire. And for some reason, there's a scene with all of them, like, in a diner, and the lady's telling them, don't sit there, you're going to burn the seats down, make sure you sit on the tinfoil. And it just cracked me up, because it made me think of when I was a kid, and I went to my grandmother's house, and we weren't allowed to sit on the couch unless it had plastic all over it. And I was like, of all things with these guys, like, she's worried about them sitting down, on their tinfoil, and then... this isn't necessarily a spoiler, but at some point they're trying to go undercover. So the only one that can handle being on fire is Amadeus Cho, because he's the Hulk. And he shows up, and of course he's just a dude that's burning. So he must smell like rotting flesh when he walks up. Because he walks in and they go, what's that smell? And he goes, well, I just ate some barbecue. It just cracked me up,
That was him. He was walking in disguise.
Right, he's walking in disguise, and he's obviously what smells because he's burning.
Right,
and he's like, "No, we just ate barbecue down the street."
It was bad. Like,
it was bad. Yeah. But overall, I mean, I'll let you, because you've been kind of doing your War of the Realms update, so you can tell us how you think this fits in with the rest of the story.
I think it fits in great. I think it actually keeps it relevant to the rest of the story. That's what I was going to say about it. I didn't get a chance to tweet out about this one or Uncanny X-Men because I had a really busy day. I lost track of everything, and I was able to read these like literally just before we came on. Okay.
There was a lot this week.
There were four, but I read Punisher Journey into Mystery this morning. I thought this fit in really well. It was very entertaining, and by the end of it, you really want to see where it's going and how it works with the rest of the story. But I really think it fits in well, and like you said too, all these books this week are number twos, and Journey into Mystery is a number three. So if you're already reading them, you're already into this. If you're not,
we're not spoiling it.
So.
Here's what I will say in general about the whole War of the Realms story arc so far, though, is that it's had a lot more comedy than I expected. Like, every one of these seems to have, like, a comedic bent to it that I wasn't expecting in a story that has, like, kind of the stakes that this
The Punisher
has,
did.
You know,
but
no,
you wouldn't
well,
expect
Punisher,
that.
Yeah, Punisher never did. Does. But these all these books seem to have a really comedic undertone to them.
Yes.
And it makes them really fun to read, which is important because most of these are ancillary books to the main story, and they're not necessarily required reading. So to me, that's what has made them fun to read and makes it worth picking them up and going forward with them. So.
Did you get to read Strike Force from last week?
Yes. Yeah,
I did. That one was really funny.
That one was really good.
Funny, really good, good action. Anytime you have Deadpool in there like that, I thought that one was very entertaining from both humor and action.
And also more relevant to the story than some of the other ones.
Yes.
The one shot seemed to be, because the other one we talked about was like the War Scrolls.
Yeah.
Which isn't actually a one... I thought it was a one-shot. It turns out it's not. It's a three-issue series. But those are the ones that feel like they're necessary reading to the story.
Yeah.
Whereas most of the rest of these, like I said, they're just the side stories. Because I remember when I was talking about issue number one of this a few weeks ago, we were talking about how really the series in general was just filling in the gaps of the story.
Right.
Because we kind of already know through the main story that this, you know, that Cinder is, you know, doing her conquest or whatever. And in the main book, we're probably never going to find out all these details.
Right.
You know, we're just going to hear, in the end, we're going to hear that she was defeated, and that's going to be it.
Right.
But this book is what's filling in all the gaps.
Well, there's a pretty big, there's a pretty big surprise at the end of Journey into Mystery this week.
Yeah, I haven't read that one yet.
And it, that's the one I tweeted out this morning, that it's a good book. Same thing. Some good humor in there. Thorry's pretty funny. Thor's dog. But there's a really, it really brings it into the, makes it very relevant. Brings it right into the entire story. You'll know what I'm talking about when you get to the end of it. There's a little bit in there, like we talked about in the past, about the trailer park Skrulls.
Right.
So they're in there for a little bit. They, couple of new characters show up, but it's, yeah, when you get to the end of that one, you'll be like, oh wow, glad you're going to be glad you followed this tangent.
Right.
Punisher, actually, I remember when I said, when one came out, I said, it's kind of, you know, it's, you don't have to follow it, but if you like Punisher, you'll like it. It's still, you don't have, if you're following it, great. I think you'll be glad you did, on, when you're reading two. I actually enjoyed two more than one. So, right. It's, and it has a good ending. So three should be really good. But typical Punisher story, not a lot of humor, pretty straightforward.
Right. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, exactly. And Uncanny X-Men was, again, if you're reading it, it's good, follows it along. I really enjoyed the artwork for some reason.
Yeah.
And yeah, it, not for some reason, but I just like, out of all of them this week, this one I really kind of just kept staring at the artwork, paying attention to that. But the story, again, it's by the end of it, you're glad you did. And there's pretty good, not a surprise ending to this, but it's more or less like before, you're going to be, oh wow, glad I followed this tangent. So all in all, they're not leaving you. It's not like if you don't follow it, you don't know what you're missing. But if you did, you're going to be like, oh wow, this really plays into the entire story. And
right.
I can't wait to see how these are all wrapped up together.
Right.
At the end. So, but yeah,
overall, like I said, War of the Realms has been a hit for me. It's been pretty fun and I've really enjoyed it. So, we're only halfway through it. So
yeah.
I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, it's tough keeping up with all of it. Like,
yeah,
it's not as hard to read it. It's hard to remember like which story is which,
right,
and how they play into it. But then at the end, I think when you get to the end of each book, that'll be fun to read each ending and
right,
see how it all plays out together. So, all right. Ed, did you get to read anything else this week?
Read a lot of Star Wars. I'm trying to get caught up on the Star Wars run now.
Which one did you read?
I'm up to issue 47 or so now. I started issue.
Yeah.
I had read the first 20 or so issues as they were coming out, and then I kind of stopped reading it. So this week I read a bunch. From issue like 21 to 47.
Oh wow.
I've really been enjoying it so far. Like the last arc I just read was The Ashes of Jeddah, and really filled in a lot of Rogue One events. Yeah,
nice.
a lot more talk about, you know, obviously, you know, these books take place between Star Wars and Empire, so you're not going to see Jyn Erso obviously, because spoilers for Rogue One, she died. But there's a lot of talk about the heroes that they were and things like that. So I don't know. I feel like overall this series fills in a lot of gaps. And like I said, I've really been enjoying it. But I read a lot of that this week because I'm trying to get caught up to that. So
were you able to read Vader Dark Visions 3? That's the one.
That's the one with the girl, right?
Yeah.
Yes, I did read that. Loved
Isn't that
the
funny?
Ending. Yes, yeah. It was awesome.
Yeah, and
clean this mess up.
Yeah, it was. You know what's funny? It's a great story that we see all the time.
Yes,
and we're like, how are those people like that? And it's there. So you can see it right on the cover.
You can spoil it now. It came out a month ago.
Yeah, and it's. It's basically the same old, like, you see these serial killers on death row, and there's these women that love them. Well, that's what this book is about. There's a woman that loves Vader.
Right.
And it's such a fun read because you're like, it brings you back to, like, the real stories where you're like, I had just watched the serial killer there that's just out on Netflix now.
Oh, yeah.
Vicious, that, you know. Anyway,
yeah,
is it Bundy?
Is that
Bundy?
I think it is Bundy.
Ted Bundy? Yeah, and he had the women, you know, he had one woman that ended up his wife.
I was going to say Al Bundy.
Yeah. No.
I was like, that's not it.
No. But you see these women that are in love with these guys, and you're like, what are you, what?
Well, and it's, she's romanticizing all these interactions with him. And he has no idea she even exists. But in her mind, it's like, oh, he's looking right at me, and he loves me, and this,
it's
you know,
great.
And it's unrequited,
clearly unrequited,
like fantasy that she lives in. And it was awesome. And of course, it ends.
Don't give the ending. Let people,
no, but that's the only way it could end
it
for Vader.
It's
you know?
$4. And it's a blast. Yeah.
There's no other way it could ever end with Vader. You know, and it's awesome. It was a lot of fun. That whole series has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So far, I've liked it a lot. And what I like about it is each issue is really self-contained.
It's a one-off, yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to read all of them. You can just pick one of them up.
Yeah. It's Dark Visions. It's that's all it is. It's a Vader story. And it's like, they're pretty cool stories.
Yeah, it has been pretty cool.
I read Orphan Age 2. That story's going really well. That's a fun one.
Yeah.
And Morning in America 2 and 3, that's really good if you've been following along.
I read the first issues of both of those, but I haven't read the rest of them.
Yeah, those are good. Monster Hunter came out today. I haven't had a chance to read that yet. The one we both reviewed, I met Hayden.
Yeah, Mary Shelley. I haven't read that one yet either, but I will read that one.
Yeah, we should talk about that next week. That one
I like the first one.
I'm looking forward to that. Ready to talk about our subject this week?
Yeah.
All right. Our whole universe was in a hot, dense state that nearly 14 billion years ago expansion started. Wait, the earth began to cool, the autotrophs began to drool, Neanderthals developed tools, we built a wall. We built the pyramids, math, science, history, unraveling the mystery, it all started with a big bang. Hey!
What is it again? Just kidding. I did all my homework, teacher.
Nice. So you needed to do homework for this.
No.
So
but you gave me homework. So.
No, I know. All right. So first off, your overall feelings on Big Bang Theory. Quick overall feelings.
Loved it.
I don't even know.
I loved it. I loved the show from start to finish. It was
one
of my favorite. I mean, I guess I don't know if it was one of my favorite shows. I mean, there's so many things that vie for that title, but I enjoyed it thoroughly every week. Like,
every week.
Yeah, I can't think of any episodes that really let me down. You know, not everything is great, but none of them left me mad or disappointed. So,
So just a little bit. Do you remember the first episode? Not the episode, but do you remember being like, what is it? You know what I mean? Do you remember watching the first episode?
I remember watching the first episode when it aired live.
Yep.
Or maybe I DVR'd it. Like, I mean, I don't know.
Whatever,
but I watched it
that week.
It that week. I don't know what turned me on to it at the time, you know, probably just because it had something to do with comic books.
Or, I don't even think it did. I think the first episode didn't really.
I just have a habit of watching, like, the first episode of everything in a new season.
Yeah.
Just to see if I'm going to like it. And I probably just stumbled across it that way.
Yeah.
Like I said, I really liked it. I liked it a lot right from the beginning. Definitely going to miss it. Like, I'm going to...
It's funny.
Thursday nights are going to have a little bit of a void for me.
I am not going to miss it, not because I don't want it to be on the air, but, like, Jen's the same way. She's like, we watched the final episode, and she was, like, all sad. Yeah. And then she's like, I'm really going to miss this. Meanwhile, we turn on TBS, and there's, like, four episodes in a row.
Well, yeah, you're
and
right.
Then you know what I mean? It's like, how are you going
to
miss it?
It'll be impossible to miss the show, but... I read an article, and I don't know if it was one of the ones that you sent me to read or what have you, but something about it made me really think about this, is that the way the show ended, and I don't necessarily want to... I guess we're going to talk spoilers, but maybe
yeah,
not right
we could
this
talk
second.
Spoilers.
But so the show ends...
Big Bang Theory. It's not a mystery.
Well, right. So the show ends with them all sitting around in their living room eating.
Right.
Which is it's the way like, it happened in every right. single episode. But what that means is that, like, this show wasn't an ending. Like,
no.
This story
like
continues to go, right. This story is going to continue to go on. It makes it seem like that their lives are going to continue on exactly the way they have for the last 12 years. We're just not going
to
be part of
it.
That story anymore.
Right.
And that's how it felt when it was over. Like, it didn't feel like to go back to Game of Thrones, like, yes, there was some things, like, of course, we all want to see what happens to Arya or whatever. But, I mean, that ended. Like, you know, there was things that wrapped up. And, you know, yes, obviously the characters that were still alive were going to continue to live their lives.
Right.
But it wasn't going to go on like business as usual, like the way it had for the last 8 seasons. Whereas
right.
with the Big Bang Theory, yeah, Penny and Leonard are going to have a kid running around, but... Otherwise, nothing changed in their lives. Like, they're all just
right.
going to continue to go on. And I liked that. I really liked the way the show ended. Like I said, you're just not going to see the rest of the story. So, I don't know. Right. That's one of those shows that could have... To me, that's one of those shows that just could have gone on indefinitely. Like, it just could have kept going. And
right.
I think it would have been
well,
fine.
Well, you do know why it didn't keep going.
Well, Jim Parsons.
Right.
Is the only reason why it ended.
They all wanted to keep, wanted to sign on for another year.
Right.
And he was like, I'm done playing Sheldon.
And really, if you listen to, well, and even if you listen to the reasons why he said that, he didn't have it's not like he was done or tired of it. He said, I just had a thought in my mind that said, maybe I won't renew this year. And to him, that was enough for him to say, well, that means I don't renew.
Right.
You know, it was like, if I have even that first hesitation of a thought in my head, then I'm not going to do it. And, you know, that's fine.
Right.
It's his right to do so. And I agree with, you know, Chuck Lorre has said that the show couldn't, you know, it was stated that it was going to go on with everybody or it wouldn't go on at all. So, and I mean,
right.
I agree with that.
Like Friends.
What's that show without, that show's nothing without Sheldon. And not saying that he was the only thing that made it go, but it wouldn't be the same without him. So, but I guess.
So the irony is.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, the irony on that is when the show was made, it was designed around Penny and Leonard. The
right.
entire story was like a Beauty and the Beast type story where, you know, they're opposites and that's how they wrote it. And then Parsons ends up doing such a great job with Sheldon
right.
that they started, the show evolved around that. Like many things do, a lot of shows do. They evolve around whatever happens. And the show became, it had like kind of that dual thing going. They still kept the Leonard and Penny thing going, but
right.
now you also have that whole dynamic of Sheldon and you really didn't know which one, it seemed to be centered around Sheldon.
Right.
But it really was like all these stories going on around him, but he think of how many stories were really about him. There were,
right.
you know, not as many, but the show was kind of like everybody dealing with him.
Right. Well, and I think, you know, this show went on for 12 years, so I don't know how many episodes it actually ended up being, but I think they did a pretty good job throughout the whole run Like, every character had their due. Like, it really never felt like it was all about Sheldon or, like, everybody.
Right.
There was plenty of Howard stories. There was plenty of Raj stories. You know, everybody got their due. So I think they did a good job with that overall.
280 episodes.
Yeah, which is insane.
That's
right?
12 years, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, but, yeah, they everybody got the, I mean, and what year did, you know, Amy come in?
Well, Amy and
Bernadette.
I couldn't think of her name. I only watched it for 12 years. They both came on in season 3. Because that was in one of the articles that I was reading earlier today.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, to a lot of people, that's when the show really picked up.
It,
you know, became a top 10 show was when there was more than one female lead, you know, and not just Penny.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that they both came on, you know, basically in the same season.
In the same year. Yeah.
And it, honestly, it kind of felt like it had been on longer than, like, I thought it was later for both of them. But it was season 3.
Right.
So,
well, 3 years is a long time.
It is, but they were on it longer than I thought they were. Like, out of 12 seasons, I didn't realize they, you know, I was thinking season 5, you know, 4 or 5, you know. I didn't realize they both hit that early. But,
So one of the main reasons we wanted to talk about it was its impact in the comic book world.
Right.
And there's kind of like two schools of thought on it. If you look around the internet, there's people that love it for that reason, and then there's people that hate it for that reason.
Right.
And I've been having this conversation for, since almost a year now, going into stores and talking to people about Big Bang Theory because we knew this was the last season. And it's pretty much the same thing. I get the same response to people in person. And I ask them, you know, I'll ask them about the show and they'll be like, oh, I hate it. It's so, and it's funny to me that the different types of people that don't like the show. And I've found that there are people that are, literally, I've spoken to people that are the epitome of the stereotype, and they don't like the show.
Right.
Okay. And then I've talked to people that are so outside the norm. They're not into comic books, or they're into comic books, but they're not like, they don't go to the stores a lot or something, whatever it is, but they're not in that world. And they don't like the show because they don't think it's accurate and they think it's silly.
Right.
So
I would argue this. This show predates the MCU.
Yes.
Right? So I'm not going to say that this thing has as much cultural impact as, say, the MCU did, but now it's cool to like comic books, right, because of the MCU.
Yep.
But I would argue that it became cool to like comic books when the Big Bang Theory hit the airwaves.
Yes.
You know, whether you love it or hate it, spoiler alert, I own a comic book store. I spend a lot of time in said comic book store.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you the number of times I have heard somebody walk in my door and say, oh, this is just like the Big Bang Theory.
Right.
Because they've never been in a comic book store before. But they know about it because of the Big Bang Theory.
Right.
So whether you love the show or you hate the show, it is undeniable the influence that show has had on culture in bringing relevance to the quote-unquote nerd world. You know? Because people that would never walk into a comic book store ever will walk in because they've seen it on the Big Bang Theory. Or, you know, have heard about this or that, you know, because of the Big Bang Theory. And it's just amazing how many people say that. Like, I hear it at least, I mean, I don't want to say every day, but 3 times a week, you know?
Right.
I mean, all the time. And it has had a huge impact on making this stuff culturally acceptable. And, you know, maybe we don't even get the success of the MCU if it isn't for the Big Bang Theory, you know?
I don't know about that. But see, here's the thing.
But how many people would go see a comic book movie because of this show?
I would say it has more, it has a larger effect on, it has a larger cultural significance than the MCU, but I don't think the MCU would have been any less impactful if the Big Bang Theory didn't exist. Because we're going to love Iron Man, we're going to love those movies, and people are going to love that regardless. Okay, those were well done. But Big Bang Theory made it socially acceptable to be those people.
Right. And, well, again, here's a,
you know what I mean?
And I'm not, again, I'm not taking anything away from Marvel. I would never, you know, Marvel, again, we've already talked about it. What Marvel did is a huge achievement that'll probably never be rivaled again. But what you said is, yes, we're going to love Iron Man. Me and you and the people that already read comic books. But Iron Man doesn't get to be a worldwide billion-dollar franchise just from comic book readers. You need, you know, Uncle Joe and Auntie Sue or whatever to go see this movie too. And I'm just saying how many people of them went to see it for the first time because they liked the Big Bang Theory and they're like, oh, well, let's see what this comic book movie is all about or what have you. I'm not saying it's a giant percentage, but even if it's 1% or half of 1%, that's a lot of people, you know, that might have given these things a try. Right. Obviously, they keep coming back to the MCU because of what the MCU does. But I'm just wondering, like, does that help it become as successful as it did?
Yeah, it may have, but I think its biggest impact is in with those characters. Like, each of those characters is flawed.
Yes,
you know, in their own way, but they're also very passionate about their jobs, about their comic books, and about their relationships.
Right.
And what they showed was those are people that, now for the people that were against them or that are against that, and they're like, oh, that's just, it's so stereotypical. It was such a bad portrayal of that stereotypical comic book fan. And it's like, or comic book reader. And it's like, but those do exist.
Right.
Those were people. So it's no different than portraying a bunch of guys in a locker room in a sports movie.
Right.
So, or sports show.
Go but back to Cheers. Is that not stereotypical of about a bunch of guys hanging out on a bar stool?
Right.
Like, every show on TV is stereotypical of something. Right? Because they're all based on something that happens. A cop show, a Rescue 911 show. I mean, everything is stereotypical of a cop or a doctor or, you know, anything. Right. So
I would say the biggest nerds, quote unquote nerds, we had before this was Frasier.
Right.
But they weren't into comic books, you know, but they had that show had the kind of the same setup. These guys were picked on when they were kids and they had, I used to watch Frasier all the time. They had an episode where the plumber came in and it was the guy that used to pick on them in high school.
Right.
But the Big Bang did the same thing. They had friends from high school show up and, you know, they were afraid. They always mentioned being picked on. They always mentioned what it was like growing up and they all had, but more so what that show did is I think that brought people into comic book stores. It showed people that it was like, it's okay to go to comic book stores. Like you said, people come, hey, this is just like the Big Bang Theory or whatever.
Right.
And I just love what that show did. Like you said, I've mentioned that so many times that started before the MCU.
Right.
And it's, you could see if this show started after the MCU, it seemed like they were jumping on board.
Right.
But they didn't.
No, they set the trend.
Yeah. You know. Well, those MCU movies were getting made. It's not like the MCU jumped on board after them.
No, but, again, I'm not saying that. I don't necessarily think they're linked in any way. But yes, it wasn't. This is not a bandwagon show. I mean,
no,
it existed before it was cool to love all this stuff.
Right.
So,
yeah, some of the haters will say, oh, it's not even that creative. They just steal this. I was like, well, if it's not that creative, it's never been done before. They've never used those characters. The formula has been done before. like we mentioned with Cheers, with any of these.
Well, it's
like
a sitcom. Friends, it's a 30-minute sitcom formula.
Right.
Every show is the same. It just revolves around a different setting and different characters.
Yep.
Cheers happened every week in a bar. You know, Friends happened every week at Central Perk. And this happens every week at the comic book store. It's the same opening, the same middle, and the same ending every week for 12 years. And look at those shows. Cheers ran for, I don't know, 12 years. Friends ran for 12 years. I mean, these shows ran for a long time. And I guess that was the only thing I was going to say earlier that I was going to miss the Big Bang, is that something will just come along. Like, we went from, I watched Cheers every Thursday night growing up religiously until it ended. And as soon as it ended, like the next year, I started watching Friends every Thursday night for 10 years. And then Friends ended, and I started watching The Big Bang Theory every Thursday night for 10 years. Before that, I was watching Seinfeld along with Cheers. So something else will just come along, and it'll run for 10 years, and I'll watch it too. But, you know, these – I don't know. Like I said, not to diminish it, but these shows are, you know – groundbreaking. I mean, again, I don't want to say that it's groundbreaking because, you know, it's just a sitcom. But I mean, it really did change a lot of things about the way, this culture is perceived. And, like I said, I just don't think it becomes as cool out in the world to like this stuff if the Big Bang Theory didn't exist.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
So,
like, so that gets me to like his T-shirts.
Yes.
And the entire set. But his T-shirts, for instance, like Sheldon, and we say his T-shirts, if you're listening to this, you like the Big Bang Theory, you know what we're talking about.
Right.
But his T-shirts were, you know, symbolic of the comic book world, but then look at everybody's wardrobe and the set around them. It was as colorful as anything on TV.
Yes.
It's set up like a comic book. It's like it was all of their shirts. They were, I think the picture that I tweeted out is basically they're all, it's when I announced this is what we're doing, that picture was basically a rainbow.
Right.
If you look at all their shirts, the way they went across, it went like, I think it actually went in order, like purple or blue. Purple, blue, whatever. But it went all the way in order across. And it's like, that's the way that show went. Anytime you're watching that show, nobody had matching anything.
Right.
And, you know, to each other, they all had contrasting colors. And and then the backgrounds that they had, the walls, the way they were painted, it was like a comic. It was like pages out of a comic book, every single scene.
Well, and then
that made it so much fun. Even the most depressing episodes, you'd be like, it was just so happy looking.
Right. Well, and to get back to the wardrobe really quickly, I mean, it's all going to the Smithsonian now. So, I mean, they did a lot of stuff on that show right, you know. None of that stuff was by accident. Like, everybody had a look that was carefully thought out. And, you know, Sheldon had a different... you know, superhero character T-shirt on every week, and
so I'll give you something fun. That's something fun we do here. So, in my theater, there's a setting on the projector that I can set. You know that soap opera effect that you talk about, like you set your TV to it, the motion.
Yeah,
you watch this show in there, and it's a 110-inch screen, and you put that motion thing.
Yeah.
And everything's crystal clear. So you can see everything in the background. So you're in that comic book store and you can pick stuff out way in the background. And it's a blast to see all the little knickknacks on the wall that if you're watching it in normal, you can't see them because it's just like they're moving the camera and stuff's blurring in the background. And this steadies everything. And because it's so big, it's crystal clear and you can see little knickknacks and all these little things in the background that are just so cool that it's like being in a comic book store.
Yeah. Which honestly, that's the best looking comic book store. Like, I wish my store looked like that, you know.
Well, did you see?
I mean, for a guy that never made any money, like Stewart owned the comic book store that continually lost money apparently.
Yeah, he was
He had $300,000 worth of inventory in there, if it was a penny. And
right.
You know, has Stan Lee coming to do signings.
Signings, yeah.
I wish my store looked like that.
But, yeah. Didn't he have, like, Neil deGrasse Tyson show up all these, I mean, Gaiman, didn't he show up in the store and they all made fun of him?
Yeah.
But
yeah, every time I saw that set, I was like, man, I wish I had that many statues and I wish I had that much crap in my store.
Did you see on DC Universe, they got a tour of the store?
Oh, no.
Okay, so it was on last Thursday, so you can find it easily, whatever the date was last Thursday.
Right.
On DC Universe, they do a tour of the store with, what's his name that plays Stewart? He goes around the store and they're like, so what do you think of these bins? And he's like, they're flipping through the bins. And he goes, they're not in alphabetical order or anything. They're just there. And then they go over to the new comics wall and he goes, what the heck is this? He goes, this is my, like, you know, my, not ADD, but my, whatever.
Right.
And he's like, he's looking at it and he goes, it needs to be in order. And he goes, they went by whatever looks good, right. I guess, because it's a TV show. He's laughing.
Well, I'll tell you, the one thing that bugged me every single week when I watch that show is because they're always standing there at the bins, flipping through all the books that are all bagged and boarded, but they're all sitting there with a book plopped open that they're reading. Right. It's like, where's the bag and board for that book that you just pulled out of the bin and you're reading? Every week it was like that. I said something every week for like 12 years. It's like,
that's the business manager.
That particular one is not bagged and boarded. It's like,
no, they had a couple of the scenes when they were talking to him, and they did the scene when, Leonard sneezed. He sneezes and he goes, oh, you just bought the Batman series. Nice choice.
That was awesome.
But yeah, he said he loved playing that character. He loved being in the store. You really got the feel listening to him in that interview that he really likes comics because he was going around the store. He goes, I'm going to miss this place.
Right.
This is a blast, you know? And at the end of the interview, it was funny. The girl that was doing the interview, she's got a mug, a DC Universe mug. She goes, I'm going to leave this behind. And she puts it on the shelf.
Right.
And then they end the interview with them showing the final episode, and they're at the register. It's a scene in the final episode. They're at the register, and they highlight. You can see the mug sitting right on the shelf behind
them. Oh, really?
The other thing
I noticed, too, is, like, those books changed.
Yeah.
Like, they were actually fairly relevant every week. Like, every time I watched that show, you could pick out a book that had just come out within a couple of weeks. So they were always looking at new comic book issues, which is cool because they could have set that up and left it the same for 12 years and nobody really ever would have known the difference.
Right.
But if you look at the walls closely from week to week, you can see all the new. Yeah. You can see all the new
issues.
That's
what was cool.
So like they ran out and bought 20 new issues every week and slapped them up on the wall, which is really cool.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, remember Seinfeld, it was look for Superman.
Right.
Supposedly
Superman was in every episode.
And it's like on Big Bang, it was just like look in the background at anything that's on the fridge or anything, whatever.
Something
like,
everywhere.
Did you see the special after the show?
I did.
And I watched
them on Colbert afterwards too.
Oh, did you? I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
And they said the woman that played Howard's mom has been on the fridge ever since.
And I didn't know that until I saw that show, which is really cool. Yeah.
That was really cool that she was always there after that. And I heard them say in the thing that they never met her. They never saw her. But I don't know if they were just saying that because you never saw her on TV.
Because if they had never met her and then she passed away, like, they wouldn't have cared.
Yeah. Well,
it's just the voice of somebody that I've never met before.
I hope they were just saying, like, we never saw her, like, on the show.
Right.
Is what they meant. But, it's like that entire thing. And, did you hear about the crossover thing they had going with Flash?
Mm-mm.
And so that show obviously started before the Arrowverse did.
Right.
But Jim Parsons used to wear a lot of Flash shirts.
Right.
So the Flash series, in the Flash shirt show, Cisco started wearing, I think some like science shirts for Sheldon.
Oh, Big Bang shirt, yeah.
Yeah.
Or science shirts.
Yeah,
no, I never really.
I don't remember exactly what it was, but I don't remember the shirts, but I do know that they talked about it. The character that plays Sisko was saying how, like, they had a big thing going back and forth between them.
That's cool.
And they're all CBS entities.
Right.
You know, CW's own. They're all the same parent company, but I thought that was pretty cool.
That is cool.
That was going back and forth.
Yeah.
But, hang on. So what was I going to say? So people coming into your store talking about Big Bang Theory. Do you have any people coming in? Have you ever heard any negative talk?
Honestly, I never have.
In your store.
Like, I've never met anybody personally that didn't like the show, at least that I know about. You know, I'm sure there's people that come in that didn't like it, and we just never got into
that
conversation.
They just don't talk about it, right.
But I didn't realize that there was so much backlash against the show until I start reading articles online.
Right.
But, you know, if you go online, you can find backlash against, you know, the hour of the day if you want to. So, I mean,
right.
I don't put any stock in that. But honestly, yeah, I didn't even realize that people didn't like it. I just thought, you know...
You don't get to be
on the air for 12 years if people don't like it. But no, personally, I've never really had any negativity or anybody telling me they didn't like it. As far as I knew, everybody loved it.
Right. And it's, I mean, I've heard people that don't like it, and some people are like, they just don't like the show. They think it's bad acting. Or
right.
They'll think it's bad writing, or they'll think whatever. It's not
which
for them. Because,
which is fine, though, because
yeah.
Not everybody has to like everything. You
no.
know?
Yeah, you're right. But I don't. I think it's sitcom acting.
The thing
you
is,
know, it's.
I understand. I guess I understand if you don't like it just because you don't like it. Because, like I said, I don't like every show, and you don't have to like everything. But it's to me, it's the people that don't like it because of. The stereotypes that it perpetuate, like people that don't like it because of a cause, that's what I don't understand.
Right.
You know, like if you just don't think it's funny or you just don't like the characters, that's fine. Like,
right. It's
to
not
each his
for
own.
You.
But the people that kind of have a bone to pick with it, that's what I don't understand. This is sitcom entertainment. It's not meant to be socially relevant. It's not trying to make a statement. It's not.
But I think it was socially relevant.
Well, but I don't
and
think
that's
it,
the thing.
I don't think
it's
it
like...
was trying. It wasn't. Because it wanted to be. Like, it didn't set out to be that. You know what I'm saying? That
well,
was just a byproduct of what happened.
Right.
But, I don't think it was trying to perpetuate any negative stereotypes. Like, I just don't understand the people that have such, like, hatred for it because
right.
of the way it portrays nerds or this or that.
So,
and it,
here's
it's
the
like,
thing. Off of what you just said, it's like, what you said, the negative stereotypes. Like, people think, and that's what ends up happening. As soon as you say stereotype, people think negative.
Right.
But I don't think that's bad. It's like,
right.
there are stereotypes. It doesn't mean it's negative. We're not saying it's bad. And that's one of the things I really think this show does is that what it did is like, the, like in one of the articles, it said authenticity. And
right.
it did. It was like, they would do stuff that was real world. Like they
right.
talked about, you know, Ben Affleck playing Batman. They
right.
did the Star Wars marathon on Star right. Wars Day. They
well,
did
and
all
they
these
went,
things.
They went to the comic store every Wednesday on New Comic Book Day. And that's
right.
what you do if you're a comic book reader.
Right.
You know?
But what I thought that did is it took people that are like that.
Right.
That and we know people like these characters. We know people like this.
Right.
And you maybe not as... Maybe not geniuses, but...
Don't speak
know.
For yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, I don't know anybody that's a
yeah,
genius.
Yeah.
Maybe you do.
Right.
but you know what I mean? So it's like,
yeah.
when they did like Star Wars Day, and they all sat around and they did their movie marathon, I'm sitting there going, I'd done that.
Right.
I can't wait to do it again. Or
right.
I wish I had... four people to bring over to do that.
Right.
Usually it's me and my son now. Or it would be like, if you were up here, it'd be me and you. It's like...
Well, but, and then here's the thing, too, is like, you know, we've... you know, we're older and we've kind of moved on with our lives. You know, we're married, we have kids, we have this and that. But if you go back to high school, you know, we had our group of friends and we sat around in the basement and ate and joked just like they did every single week on this show. You know, I mean, that's what you do, you know, and I think that's what I kind of don't even remember the point I was trying to make with that, but it's kind of like, you were talking about the authenticity, and like, that's what you do, right? Like, that's, we sat there in the basement and watched Star Wars, and we had Chinese food, and we talked about, you know, the maintenance people on the Death Star because we saw it in Clerks or what have you. It's like, that is what real people do that like this stuff. Birds of a feather, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
so, one other thing, like you said about eating, and, my wife and I talked about this years ago about Big Bang Theory, in that it was, and this isn't comic booky, but another thing it did for society is that gathering around and eating in front of like the TV.
Right.
Like, we never saw their TV, but that's what they were sitting in front of. Right? That's what this world has, that's what we do in my family.
Right.
My kids are out, they're older now, they're gone. We don't sit down and eat. But even when we did, we didn't sit at a table.
Right.
There's too much go, go, go nowadays. Right. So there was no, like, when I was a kid, we sat down at a kitchen table.
Me too.
It was six of us. My dad sat at the end of the table with the gallon of milk on the floor. If you wanted more milk, you passed them your glass. I mean, there was a routine to dinner. Dinner was at a certain time, you know, between 5 and 6. That was life. Nobody answered the phone. That's the way it went. But nowadays, with social media, with the phones, with everything, your go, 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 it's, you sit down. We have TV trays.
Right.
And as a family, we sat down and we watched TV shows. For us, it was, you know, we watched Psych, or it became Big Bang Theory for a little while when they were still here. But there, that was, that, them sitting in front of the TV and eating dinner was a reflection of society, which I think then, you know, perpetuated that.
Right.
And at the same time, a lot of people are like, oh, we don't socialize anymore. We don't have those dinners around the table. Yeah, I know. Because we're talking 24/7 on our phones.
Right.
Through text. We actually socialize with family members and friends more now than we did back at the kitchen table.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? It's like, but I really like that. And I've commented on that. And for many years, that the way they sat around was like the first show to me that really emphasized that that's how you sit down and you eat now.
Right.
And that's how you make, that's what you do with your family and your friends. And for them, that was their family.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No.
So then that's part of the authenticity too. And it's like, that's real world. They did an awesome job just talking about all the comic books, too.
Yes.
They reference comic books that, and here's a kind of a funny thing. It's like, so they did a really good job at referencing comic books, and people like yourself would be like, yep, that's accurate. Like when they would exchange comic books on a bet, and that would be, you'd know the value. If you were a comic book, quote unquote, nerd, you'd know the value of those books. So my son said, I asked him about it because I told him we were doing this podcast, and he goes, yeah, some of my professors hate that show. And I'm like, why? And he goes, now these are like, they're people that, he has one professor that he said is like Sheldon.
Right.
Very, very smart. He's ridiculous. The guy's learning a language so that he can go study in that country, but because that's where the next solar eclipse is going to be.
Right.
But these people are super smart, and they're like, the show is so stupid. All the stuff they talk about is wrong. But they're talking about the science stuff. Like, that's not what the show's about.
but actually, that's also not what I read. Like, from what everything I've read, like, you and I, we talk about this when they talk about comic books, and we say, oh, well, that's very accurate because we know comic books. We don't know science.
Well, you know it better than I do, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know science, so I wouldn't know if they were, what they were saying was right or wrong, but from everything I've read, they were very accurate. Like, they went to as much length as they went to make sure that the comic book talk was accurate. they made sure that the science stuff they were saying was accurate too. So I was surprised. I'm surprised to hear that from the professors, because again, and I wouldn't never know the difference, but the articles that I read about this, that they went to pretty good lengths to make sure that what they were saying science-wise was also pretty accurate. So
no, I had read that as well. I just thought it was funny hearing that from like actual professors.
Well, so maybe they know. They probably know better than we do. So
well, and that's the other thing is they might also be picking on some stuff that's like a lot of what Sheldon was talking about was theory, like string theory.
Right.
So it's theoretical physics, and you're like, so they just gave one version, and then somebody, and they may have actually, as a show, they might have actually written it to be funny.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then the scientists that, you know, these geniuses that my son's talking to are like, that's not right. This couldn't happen, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I mean, they had real scientists on the show, real people.
Right,
and
Bill
I'm
Nye.
I was just going to say, I'm not talking about Bill Nye.
They had Bill Nye. No, but they had Stephen Hawking, you know. Who's
Pretty
smart.
was awesome. That was great in the special how they went, what's his name that did the
Howard
impression of him?
Yeah.
Howard had to do the impression. And he was so nervous. I didn't know. It's like he was right off camera.
Right. I didn't know that
Stephen
either.
Stephen Hawking
was
right off camera. And and when you see that scene now, you're like, he's like right there.
Yeah.
It's like they're in the cafeteria, but he's right off camera.
Well, and then
like,
he has the little remote control Stephen Hawking.
That was a different episode.
It was different, but that was awesome.
But it was so funny because they're like, oh, all the characters were saying it's offensive, but then Stephen, at the end, Stephen Hawking's like, that's awesome.
Yeah, but that's the thing, and that's where the critics are going to jump in and say, that's why the show's bad, because it was offensive and it did stuff like that. But I mean, we all have to laugh at
Hawking himself laughed
exactly,
at it.
Right?
That's
I'm
what's
sure
great
that if he didn't
it.
Think it was, like, I'm sure if he didn't approve of it, it wouldn't have been on the show.
Right.
Like, at some point they ran that by him and said, hey, is it all right if we do this? And he says, yes, it is. Otherwise, it wouldn't have made the show. So you have to realize that he was okay with it. And again, you have to have a sense of humor about things, you know.
Right.
Granted, the guy got dealt a pretty bum rap, you know, but if you can't have a sense of humor about
he did a lot with his bum rap.
Exactly. Well, he did. Yeah. No, he did, but you know, I don't know. And again, that goes back to, you know, some of the criticisms. You just said earlier, the show had, 280 episodes. I mean, there's people that watched the first episode and got it into their head that this stereotype or that stereotype, and they hated the show forever.
Right.
It's like, can you watch 1/280th of anything and decide that it's bad? You know what I mean? It's like...
Well... That's the thing.
Can you give something a fair shake after basically 18 minutes is what it amounts to with commercials and decide that this show is the worst thing that's ever been on television after 18 minutes? It's like, give me a break, you know? I can't decide it's the best thing after 18 minutes either, but, you know, you got to give something more than one. Like, even a show that I'm not sure I'm going to watch, I watch 3 or 4 episodes before I decide I'm not going to watch it. Even with Road of Bones that we talked about, at least I'm going to read issue 2 before I decide I don't like it or I'm not going to read it any further. It's like, you can't decide on anything after, you know, one portion of it. So,
right.
I don't know.
It's funny, a lot of the, you know, criticisms or whatever, talking about characters on the show being over-exaggerated or whatever, but That's the idea of a show. You have to over-exaggerate it. But I don't even think... Do you really think that these characters are over-exaggerated? Because I know people that are like these
characters. In some cases, they might be under-exaggerated. But again, even if you want to talk about over-exaggerations, I can go back to Norm on Cheers. Like, do people really walk into a bar and everybody there shouts their name out when they walk in? I mean,
they do now, and everybody goes, that's like Cheers.
But it's an exaggeration of a stereotype of a guy that spends every day in a bar, you know, drinking beer.
Right.
And, you know, and honestly, if we're going to talk about bad stereotypes, I mean, we're promoting alcoholism on Cheers. Here, all we're promoting is liking comic books. So, I mean... No, what's but the it's worst? The, it's the what's the worst stereotype? Oh,
I had one conversation with a gentleman that was literally the epitome of a character on the show, and not one of the main characters, but and I won't say which one. I don't think he's a listener, but but
yeah,
I had this conversation with him, and he was very offended by the show and by the way it perpetuated the stereotype. And I don't understand that. I don't understand. I don't think it perpetuates it because I don't think it's making fun of it.
Well, and the thing is, I guess, what was offensive about any of these characters? Like, so what? Maybe you are just like Sheldon. Like, let's say you're just like Sheldon.
Right.
And you're like, oh, well, this character on the show is just like me. But what was so bad about it? Like, Sheldon wasn't a serial killer. He wasn't, you know, a child molester. He wasn't, you know,
he was a scientist.
He went to work every day.
But Sheldon also had what you would consider, I don't remember. I'm not, my wife is, she knows all of this. Those are the people she works with. People with like Asperger's.
Right.
And,
they said he was maybe on the spectrum for autism.
Which is Asperger's is like the mildest, on the milder end. But he definitely had that.
Right.
And it's like, but my wife and I all the time watching the show, we would be like, we know she knows people like that and has worked with people like that. And there are people that are that smart that are like that. And it's like that balance in life. Like you can't be good at everything.
Well, right. But did they belittle it or make fun of it? Right. They weren't, there was nothing negative about it. If he was portraying this character that had autism or Asperger's or whatever.
Right.
I used to watch L.A. Law, and there was a character on L.A. Law that had Asperger's. But
yeah,
what was offensive? There's nothing offensive about portraying somebody that has these conditions if they're not making fun of them or they're not – like Sheldon wasn't a fundamentally bad person.
But here's the thing. They did all make fun of each other.
Right, but you do that. I make fun of you all the time.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, friends make fun of each other all the time.
Right. Yep.
You know,
and it's like you make fun of certain shortcomings. You make fun of other things. You know, it's like mistakes, whatever. But I wouldn't even say like Sheldon had his shortcomings, but he was, and throughout the show, Sheldon was working on them.
Well,
and obviously, you know, emphasized with that ending, which was incredible.
But even still, it's like the characters would make fun of him, but I never remember once Leonard pointing at him and going, haha, you have a mental illness. Like,
no.
There was no negativity about any of that stuff. You know, it was just like, well, you know what, you're a big pain in the butt, but, you know, it was never.
But I love you.
Right,
and
exactly.
You know, and that's how they dealt with it. It was like brothers,
right.
You know, and it's like, and they each were a pain in the butt. I mean, Howard at the beginning.
Oh, they all were, right. They all had their issues. I mean,
they all had
Leonard
their issues.
Leonard is lactose intolerant and this and that. And it's like, everybody had something, right? They all had something. But they weren't perfect people. And that's the whole thing. It's like, nobody in life is a perfect person either. These were all flawed characters that shared certain traits that other people share, you know?
Right.
And they just happened to all like comic books and Star Wars or what, you know, whatever
and
it was.
I thought they were showing how successful these people can be.
Right.
And not just, I'm not talking money. I'm not talking, they were all genuinely, even Raj, trying to work, I mean, the entire arc, his story arc, of trying at the beginning of the show, he couldn't talk to women.
Right.
And then by the end of the show, he can. But I liked that they ended it the way they did in that his life is going on. He's plugging away.
Right.
And we all know people like that, that it's just like, okay.
Right. He doesn't, at the end, he doesn't get
45 years old and doesn't,
he doesn't get the girlfriend.
Girlfriend.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't end with him getting married or finding true love. He's
right.
He gets Buffy. I guess, you know.
For a date?
A date for some weird reason. Yeah, I don't know why she showed up.
That was
awesome.
And that was funny when Sheldon's doing his speech, his heartfelt speech. He goes, is that Buffy?
Yeah. But yeah, it was, I liked that. Like you said, he didn't find true love at the end of the show. Like,
they left him
right where he was for 12 years.
They actually, he had it. or his version of it, and he right. left it at the airport two episodes earlier or right. whatever. And that whole thing, the whole Raj almost like almost every episode having to explain he's not gay.
Right.
And I thought that was people I've heard people say like that that's wrong.
Right.
And I'm like, no, that's real. Right. There are people that deal, you know, that's like I went, you know, anybody that has been down to RISD.
Right.
That I remember going saying I wanted to go there in high school, and they're like, well, you know, it's 80% gay.
Right.
So
what?
And then they're like, are you? No.
Right.
And this was back in the '80s, and it's like, but it didn't matter.
Not that there's
it's
anything like, wrong with that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Seinfeld. But it's like, but there are people, and then but they made fun of stuff like that. That's the culture they were in. It's like, right. I could, well, remember the episode when they were, Howard and Raj were kissing that thing?
Yes.
Only and it's
because
like,
they had the preview. It was only
they had it, but I remember
special.
It. But yeah. That was dumb. But
it was.
That's something I could picture you and I doing as a joke. We right. wouldn't get into it like that.
No, not like they got into it.
No, but if they had a machine like that, we'd be like, hey, and we'd make a face and we'd do something stupid.
Right.
But that's something people do. And it's like, I know people, it's like, that exists.
Yes.
And I don't think it's a bad thing. He's the type of person that, yeah, you look at him and his character, is he gay? And he's like, I'm not gay. But they did it on Saturday Night Live, the effeminate or whatever, and the husband that was married. They had right. a whole skit on it that used to pop up all the time. It's not a bad character. They're not making fun of it. They're actually empowering it. Like, so what?
Right.
So. Oh, what else you got?
Nothing really. I mean, I think we covered most of it.
So, do you think there's going to be any spinoffs? Other than we have Young Sheldon still going.
Well, we have Young Sheldon. I mean, Johnny Galecki and Kaley Cuoco are both open to doing a spinoff with Leonard and Penny. And I would absolutely watch that, but that's just them talking. I don't know if that's anything that's on the horizon. The only problem I see with spinoffs is that, like, the only way a Sheldon and Penny spinoff works is if they pack up and move. Leonard and Penny works is if they pack up and move across
and
country. Because otherwise, it's just the Big Bang Theory again. Because
right.
they're all going to be the same place. So they would have to pick up and move their lives somewhere else.
You could have the other people move.
Right, but you know, getting
three other people
to move away as opposed to one other person to move away is
well,
difficult.
if you have Sheldon and Amy move, they could stay in their apartment and they could have life go on. They could talk about the other characters, but they don't. And then maybe they pop in and out if they wanted to.
Right.
You know.
I think that's the only spinoff that really works for me. Like, I don't necessarily think I would want to see a Howard and Bernadette spinoff.
I'm just spitballing. What about the idea of a spinoff for the comic book store?
Well, like, yes, I could see Stuart and his girlfriend have a spinoff. But same thing, does that store has to move away? Because
no, it doesn't.
Sure it does, because otherwise why would Sheldon and them never come in again? There has to be a reason for these characters to exist and the other ones not to be around anymore.
Right. So you could do the reason I came up with them is because I was trying to think of something like Cheers, where Frasier was the spinoff and that was the periphery character.
Right, but it also spun off because he moved to Seattle.
Correct. So I'm wondering if they could do maybe, again, it would take a Sheldon and Amy moving and then the other characters be willing to come in
right.
periodically.
Right.
But you could keep it there, and that would help with the whole, you know, where, all right, Jim Parsons doesn't want to do this anymore. we'll have them move away because right. Amy got a job in whatever and he followed her and they won their award. Or they, because they won the Nobel Prize, they got a new job at such and such.
Right.
And you could do something like that. But that's the story that I think for people like us would be way more fun. And I think with the comic book fans, you jump into Stewart's story and you keep that comic book store going and see what they could make out of that.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the problem, I would watch a Penny and Leonard show for sure. If they made one, I would watch it. But to me, it doesn't become the Big Bang Theory anymore. Like, it becomes more of just an everyday sitcom about a husband and a wife with a new baby. Because if he moves away, because the same premise, let's say, you know, Penny's a pharmaceutical rep or whatever. Let's say she gets offered some primetime job in Boston and they move across Boston. But now it's like they're not engulfed in that nerd lifestyle anymore. Like, I just don't think it becomes the same. It has the same vibe anymore. It's still a show I would watch because I like those characters and I would like to see where they go as parents and things like that. But I think it would be hard to, like, I don't think you capture lightning in a bottle again. I mean,
no,
even Young Sheldon isn't the same as the Big Bang Theory. I mean, it's a fine show. I like it just fine.
I like it,
but it's not must see TV. Like, to me, like the Big Bang Theory was.
But when they made Big Bang, they didn't know it was going to be must-see TV.
The only thing that keeps you watching Young Sheldon every week is the fact that it's, you know, it's Sheldon. And it's, you know, you just want to see all the connections to the Big Bang Theory. Like, I actually thought they did a great job with the season finale of Young Sheldon that aired after.
I actually thought, and I said this to my wife, I thought they did too many callbacks to the Nobel Prize.
Well, right, but I don't know.
In that one episode, they referenced, because it literally aired right after the season finale.
But that's not an accident.
No, I know it's not an accident, but I'm looking forward to more callbacks in the future seasons.
Right.
But I think they referenced it like four times.
Well, the whole show was about the Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
Literally.
And the ending of the show was really good, too.
Right.
When they showed all the characters sleeping, and he's like, because he felt like he was going to be alone forever, and that was really cool. I really like that touch. The Bernadette, the picture on her desk, the little girl playing Bernadette, the picture on her desk looked like grown up Bernadette.
Right.
I thought it was. I'm like, why does she have a picture of herself grown up on her nightstand? But no, I think Young Sheldon is good. I don't think it has the same. Maybe now that the show's over, it'll pick up a little bit, but I don't think it has the same popularity as Frasier did.
No,
Frasier ran for what, another 10 years?
Yes, I think it rang. I think it actually outran Cheers.
Cheers,
think so. Yes.
I don't,
especially when it comes back again, because from what I heard, it's coming back. So,
is it really?
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Oh, I loved that show.
I did too. Obviously, you don't get John Mahoney anymore.
No. Yeah.
But
the dog's probably dead.
And the dog's probably dead too. But you could definitely get Niles and Frasier and
if you think about it, those shows are very similar. You got Niles and Frasier are Penny and Leonard.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, that was the basis of the show, and then the characters around it.
Right.
I just thought, like,
and you know, again, it became a very different show from Cheers. So that's not to say that a Penny and Leonard show couldn't work, because it would have to be different, really.
Yeah.
Otherwise, why bother with it if it's just more of the same? So I don't know. Like
I
said,
your idea of them coming to Boston.
I think
if he could work at MIT or something.
I think if Chuck Lorre is listening to Kaley Cuoco and Johnny Galecki saying they want to go on with a spinoff, if he's not at home writing it right now, he doesn't like money, because that's just a recipe to print money. So,
I think right at the beginning, definitely.
Not that any of them need it. Like, not one of them needs another dime for the rest of their lives, but, you know, they're going to be making money in syndication off of this till the day they die. So,
yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it's
none of them ever have to work again. So
TBS playing it like
Like 4 hours a day,
4 hours a day at 2 episodes an hour. It's
right.
I mean, it's, we watch it all the time still, but.
Yeah. I've never gone back and watched a rerun of it, to be honest with you. I mean, I probably will now that it's over.
Really?
Yeah, I never do.
I think I have them all recorded.
I don't.
Go on my DVR.
I know you do. I've seen your DVR. There's a lot of Big Bang on there. Yeah. No, I don't know. Like, but I didn't watch Seinfeld reruns until it ended either. You know, it's
right.
Like, now that it's not on every week, I'm sure I'll go back and try to get my fix by watching the reruns.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe not, because I don't watch TV the same way as I used to either. Because
I think
now
I'm
there's no
up to the entire
now,
series.
There's no shortage of things to watch anymore. So like I don't find
right.
time in my day to watch 4 hours of The Big Bang Theory because I've got a DVR full of other stuff to
right.
watch now. So it's not like before when we had quote unquote
well, I put
three
it on,
channels. You know,
I'll put it on when I go to bed.
Yeah,
and I'll get an episode in before I fall asleep or something
right.
like that. And it's like I used to do that with Frasier for years.
Yeah.
I watched the entire series of Frasier because that was on. I don't know what channel it was on, but on my DVR, you can hit the record, you know, it won't duplicate.
Right.
So that's what I'm doing with Big Bang. It just saves it in one folder, and I have, like, almost the,
all
every
the whole
season.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Takes a big DVR.
I was going to say, yeah, that's a big chunk of DVR for 240 episodes.
Well, I have that. I also have a hard drive attached to it, too.
Right.
So. But yeah, so, no, I think, I'm hoping for a spinoff, because... I'd like to see something happen, and hopefully it becomes popular. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I mean, Friends tried it.
Right. Well, the thing is, in this world that we live in, everything gets a new life, and everything gets spun off. There's nothing original anymore. Everything's
yeah.
getting spun off from something else. You know, we just talked about Frasier coming back. We've got Will and Grace back on TV.
And I liked Will and Grace.
I liked
these shows coming back.
I liked it years ago. I don't love it now.
Right. Exactly.
Now I think it's way too political for me. Don't love it.
I haven't seen the new one.
But,
I haven't seen it at
I
all.
Think with all that being said, a world where they don't try to do something with the Big Bang again is not existing. Like, something's going to happen again. It might not be, you know, it might be 5 years. It might be not right away.
I don't think it'll be that long. Because you've got a
small course, if
window
you wait,
to,
right,
to
you,
jump on
right,
it.
You can't go too yeah. long, but, well, I don't know. How long's Frasier been off? And how long was Will and Grace off and it came back?
Yeah, so, but I'm talking about not coming back. I'm talking about a spinoff.
Right.
Talking about spinoff's going to happen. It's got to happen fairly soon.
Yeah. Well, I guess you want to get them before they get locked down on something else.
Exactly.
Like, how long's Kaley Cuoco going to go before some other sitcom tries to get her on there? Or Johnny Galecki.
Right.
I mean, they're already bringing him back on the Connors. You know, not as a regular,
right.
but he's showing up. So these guys
right.
are going to get work again if they want it. So
right.
if you want to tie him down, you know, you can't let it go too long. I'm sure they're all going to take a break
yeah.
and do nothing for a little while, but
yep.
they're going to have offers pouring in every day. So if you want him for a spinoff, you better get him, you know.
Yeah.
Because so the next show they get on might run for 10 years too. So,
yeah. So, all right. That good?
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Another show that I didn't think we would be able to talk for 2.5 hours, but here we are.
Well, we talked a lot about books today, so
yeah.
we didn't get... We probably talked about this for not even an hour.
Yeah.
But, all right, so before I give out... Well, I'll give it all out. Twitter at... You can find us on Twitter at @thebrightside_chat. Email us, thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. iTunes, Google Play... Spotify, Stitcher,
Castbox.
We're on all, Castbox. We're on all those platforms. I put out a thing on Facebook, family, friends, listeners.
Yeah,
everybody.
Facebook page has grown 1,000% this week.
Well, yeah.
You know,
basically
from two likes to, you know, 60. So.
Yeah. So what I did is I put out a thing. So, John and I are getting offers to do a couple of some really cool stuff. I don't want to talk about it because who knows if it'll ever come to fruition. But we're getting offers to do some stuff, but we have to get our listener numbers up because we're new. And we're getting people are talking to us about stuff I never even thought were possible. And so they're like, oh, you got to get your listeners up to make this possible. And this is what we want to do. And And I'm like, well, how do I do that? I'm having fun. John and I are having a blast. It's like, well, you got to put stuff out to like everybody. So if you're listening and you're not subscribed to us, please subscribe. Tell your friends to subscribe. It doesn't hurt. And here's the thing. People are like, they don't even have to listen. You just need subscribers because then your phone will just download it. And that's why it's like, I don't like begging for this stuff, but that's why everybody at the end of their podcast, beginning of their podcast, is like, please rate, review, subscribe. Well, John and I are just learning now why everybody says that, right? Because you need these things, and it's like, we have our listeners, we love what we're doing, and of course we want it to grow because we want more people to enjoy what we're doing. But it's, you know, if we can get some listeners, we can get some numbers, we can tell people, we get to do some more cool stuff. So tell your friends, tell anybody, if you really like our podcast, and you know, and we know there are people out there that really like our podcast, tell your friends to subscribe to us and, you know, give us a shot. If they don't like it, but at least their phone's getting us that listen. Right. And we can get our numbers up. And that's why I put it out on Facebook. And I'm like, if I could get all my family members to subscribe.
I know, I need to go and subscribe my wife as soon as we're done. At least it'll download onto her phone every week.
Exactly. And it's like, somebody told me, he goes, subscribe onto every platform you have on your phone. And I was like, that's cheating. And they're like, no, it's not. That's what everybody does. So like, if you have like iTunes, subscribe on that. If you have Google Play, subscribe on that.
Oh, I don't even do that. So
I know, neither do I, but people tell me that's how people get their numbers up to start, because what they're saying is our numbers, like the higher our numbers are.
I don't even think I'm subscribed to us. I just know, I just get the link and listen to it, you know?
Oh, geez. Well, there we go. We just gained one.
Yeah.
But no, they're like, it's the, so the more subscribers you have, the more, the higher up you rank on each of those platforms. And then it'll be easier for people that are finding to find us. So then we get more, it's like a catch 22. You need people to do this so they can get people. I'm like, well, how do you get people? It's like trying to fish without a worm.
Right.
It's like, all right, you catch a fish by catching a smaller fish. Well, how do you do that? It's like, so yeah, we're in the middle of that. So here we are every week. We're going to be begging for listeners. So rate, review, you know, if you can go on any platform and,
if you're married, subscribe your wives or your husbands to us also.
If your kids have phones, subscribe them. That'd be awesome. So we're suckers now. We're into it. We're going to be begging for listeners. So that's what we got to do. But yeah, rate us 5 stars. We always said it at the beginning because that was the thing to say. Now people are starting to explain to us why that's the thing to say. So yeah, so give us a review on iTunes. That's probably the biggest one, but you know, subscribe, hit it up, hit us up. That'd be awesome. And we got to do that at the beginning of the show next week.
Yes,
because this is at the end at 2 hours. I don't know how many people are still listening.
Probably not a lot.
That's what we are. Yeah. So, hey, we have some great listeners. That's awesome. So we know that if it stays the same, it stays the same. I don't care. We're having fun.
Yep.
All right. You got anything else?
Nope.
All right. I'm going home. Going to bed.
All right.
Close it up.
See ya.
Good night.
Good night.
Hey, Fred. Thanks for listening to the Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. A. Pennyworth's Comics and Collectibles in Matthews, North Carolina. You can find them at apennyworthscomics.com. Apothesis Comics and Lounge in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find them at apothesiscomicsstl.com. Friendly Neighborhood Comics of Bellingham, Mass. You can find them at friendlycomics.com. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listen to the Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. Thanks for listening.